I'm Josh, and I am physically in this room.
I'm Matt, and I too am corporeal.
The champ is here.
Aw, yeah, this is Horror Show Hot Dog. So this week we have the triumphant return to Minneapolis of Adam J. Dunn, who are back from Hollywood doing things that we now realize we shouldn't talk about. That was great. I was
getting solo.
Getting the text message like, "Hey, Boner Jam, you fucked up." Like, oh.
Well, it's weird because it's like, before we had talked about it, before we're off the mic, when I was around and be like, "All right, remember, you can't let it slip." And then
and that's what happens like, with all your guys.
He's out there doing. Like, I just sat and I was like, "Ooh, this is gonna be a problem." It's like, we gotta get this taken care of ASAP.
Yeah, I'm like, wow, Adam never called. I feel cool.
Yeah.
It's like TMZ.com. Like, mildly popular podcast.
Breaks the news that Adam J. Dunn's like, I'm not even a celebrity.
Goddamn TMZ.
The internet collectively says, who?
Adam J. Dunn, known primarily for his work on a mildly popular podcast.
Fuck. So, yes.
Movies. Cool. We're mildly popular. We got a couple hundred people tuning in. Fewer people for last show, I feel.
If there's issues.
Because we had to pull it in.
It'd be lies, the number of actual downloads.
All right, so please do not reveal the shocking ending of who Adam Dunn is working for.
Or was working for.
Yeah.
Who does Adam
Dunn? You're done always.
Who does he work for?
To be fair, we all wish we worked for Peter fucking Cushing after this.
Who does number two work for?
Cushing.
That's a Austin Powers reference.
You should have.
IMDb.
Yep.
Alright, so this week was Christopher Lee week. We ended up kind of accidentally hitting on all of these being, if not Hammer, at least associated very closely with Hammer. So we're going to try not to hurt him. I know that a lot of you out there are thinking, you guys, you can't touch this. And I pray that you will just give us some time.
To make it today?
Yeah. Give us some... Just give us some Hammer time. And we'll see what we can do.
I was overcome by your dumb Hammer references. Like, first one, I'm like, nope. You're getting nothing from me. Second one, like, defenses are weak to it. All things, one more good Hammer joke. Now.
He's beginning to falter.
Just, like he's wavering in 12th.
So what you were saying was there were a couple of pumps and then a bump.
Pretty much, yeah.
And that's what did it.
That exhausts everything I know about MC Hammer, unless we're going to make a bankruptcy joke at this point.
Well, I thought I was too legit, and then I quit right at the end there.
Of course, thank you. How did we miss that?
I don't know. I was going for starting to go for obscure hits on Too Legit to Quit, because I owned both of those albums.
I had the first one.
The one cassette. But anyway, so Christopher Lee, similar to MC Hammer, in that he has legs and a face. And he was in The Mummy, or La Momia, because we're getting back into the Spanish. Yeah. We lost the Spanish for a while.
Sometimes.
But La Momia, The Mummy, Christopher Lee kind of, his eyes star in The Mummy.
Pretty much, yeah.
And Peter Cushing, Grandma Tarkin in the house. And a random guy in brown face as the Egyptian guy.
Yeah.
And two hilariously drunk Irish people, because that's what they do.
I kind of like that guy. He was all right. We opened with the 1895 on an Egyptian soundstage.
First and foremost, I love 50s movies for their lack of the ability to move the camera at all. Because they're still so damn large. It was just like, well, we'll shoot everything from the entire movie that we need from this one angle,
yeah,
and then we'll move it. So it's like, I love that the whole lockdown, everything's a lockdown camera. You might get like you get like 10 people on a dolly trying to like, or on a tripod trying to turn the 7,000 pound camera.
Yeah.
You may get a nice dolly turn. I also really like 50s movies because to show how much money you had, like nowadays it's like, we got like a dragon that like spits out naked women that all have laser guns and they're like throwing them and bombs are going off everywhere.
Sure.
And that's how you show your movies expensive nowadays. Yeah. You have like the most lavish, crazy visual effects. In the 50s it was, who has the biggest fucking set? Who has the biggest set with the most extras on it?
Yeah, like how big must that soundstage
be? The first thing we get is like 75 dudes all like pounding away in the dirt. Like, I don't think that's how the digs work, but I'm not an archaeologist.
Yeah, everybody's at ground level.
And it's like, oh, yes, no, look what I found. I'm just like, I brushed some dirt away and I found this brooch.
Well, when there's an actual artifact to be found, they go to the guy who's just banging with a hammer on something. And like, hold on, that looks like something. Stop hitting it with a hammer and take it away and kind of brush it off. The score in this, Jesus Christ, and in all of them actually, is just like straight, bum 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 bum, pretty much Sopranos screeching in the stratosphere.
Well, they're basically the fake horror movie soundtrack you imagine in your head for a cheesy horror movie, except this is when they existed for real.
Like, yeah, as I was saying to Matt when I first arrived, these are the type of movies that I like to put on when I want to take a nap. So these type of scores just lull me to dreamland. So watching all three of these movies was there's an added challenge of how long till my body just decides that the system I have set up in place for falling asleep is what's going to overtake me. And all of them were like 3/4 through, and I had to wake up and rewatch the ending. Because it's like, oh, fucking falling from those.
I'm wondering how long it's going to be here before Remy just gets told, because we're having like dog cage fight under my dining room table.
You know what's great at the beginning of this is you have the two older guys who are doing the dig, and then he's like, where's your boy? And he's lying down in the tent because his leg is broken. Well, we should get that boy to a hospital. And when you see the boy, it's fucking Peter Cushing.
Yeah.
And even in like 58, he still looks like he was born looking 50.
Adam and I were talking about this a little bit before we started recording, and my theory is that, he's probably technically younger than the guy playing his dad. Probably.
Yeah, but he's no fresh-faced youth,
No pink and rosy cheeks. We decided he probably just is.
He just kind of...
He had max level.
No, Cushing was not born.
No, he just,
is.
Oh, Cushing is and wasn't always will be.
Yeah, exactly. It's just kind of like he's... You cannot define that which defies definition.
Yeah, Cushing is the word for eternal inscribed in the hearts and minds of all men.
That is not dead, which can eternal lie.
Exactly. He's somewhere between Cthulhu and Nyarlathotep.
Yeah.
Cushing.
There he is.
I loved that sitcom, by the way, Somewhere Between Cthulhu and Nyarlathotep. They are such a wacky, mismatched couple, because Cthulhu is always making messes. And
Nyarlathotep's a thousand young, so they're going bonkers all over the place.
Cthulhu just wants to be left alone in his room to smoke pot.
He's like, we gotta clean this place up, Cthulhu. I'm digging it now. Don't be such a fatagging.
Nice. So,
so Cushing,
there's a tomb.
Yeah, there's a tomb, but more importantly, it's way more important than the tomb.
Sorry,
Cushing has got a mean case. A classic case, if you will, of twisted leg.
Yep, that'll happen.
But they forget about that pretty quick in the movie.
He limps.
Yeah.
But sometimes. I feel like there are a couple scenes where I'm like, yeah, look at that limp. And then I'm like, he seems alright.
They're like, do you think you're going to make it? And he's like, well, I got twisted leg. And like, he probably should go to the hospital. I'm like, I could have swore twisted leg is what happens when you kind of turn too fast.
Right, yeah.
Oh, crap. Then you walk it off.
Exactly. He's definitely got a walk it off level injury. Yeah. But I love that it just.
They talk about bones knitting, though.
Yeah, so. But I mean, they talk about it purely to kind of show that his dad cares a lot more about whatever they're digging up than his son. Because it's like, yeah, your boy's leg is a little fucked up there. We should probably get him to the hospital. He's like, well, he said he wanted to be here for the dig. And it's like, oh, that's kind of like, well, we said we're going ice fishing. Yeah. So, too bad that you're throwing up now, but we're just sitting in this ice house.
This is too cold and I hate it here. You fucking said you wanted to go.
It's like, well, we're in Egypt now, so you're going to fucking be in Egypt and like it.
You're going to fucking... pick up all these brooches and look at all these fucking pamphlets. All
stop that guy from breaking the artifact with his hammer.
So they get into the tomb, which, as we all know, ancient Egyptian security is just a knot tied around.
Yeah.
It's the classic security you would use to keep your little brother out of a room.
Pretty much, yeah.
It would be bitching, though, if you could curse the seal that you put on the door of your room with some kind of undead mummy curse.
If the no girls allowed sign is actually just...
What happened to Alex? He broke the seal, so the mummy kind of strangled him.
Yeah. I told him.
The thing was, it wasn't them, cutting the rope. It was, after fucking Dad was like, oh, cool, I got the mummy, but, oh, let me also check out this fucking... He got greedy. He's like, oh, cool, there's a whole Encyclopedia Britannica box of Egyptian shit. Printed on paper that is still just fine.
Yep.
Just,
Yeah, God.
So, we have Fezman. We're introduced to him.
The Egyptian guy.
Fez is a
cool
like, Fezman.
Fezman. Yeah. Fezman shows up and says, if you steal treasure from the tomb, it brings death. And they're all like, sure thing, Fezman. And then, he walks away, like, fucking Fezman.
Fezman's coming out here and fucking,
hey, guys, I got you guys,
shit,
I can
Fezman. Don't look at him. He might not talk. Oh,
hey, Fezman.
Yeah,
what's up?
That was
buddy?
A little,
Fezman.
Those who defile Egypt will die. Like, goddamn, Fezman. I would bring everybody down.
Captain, bring down Fezman. At your service. It was a little distracting to me throughout that the god's name is Karnak. Which is also Johnny Carson's, fortune teller character that he does. So I just kept thinking of the Great Karnak.
And I know it wasn't the same, but it had me thinking of the, whatever the villain from John Dies at the End was. The crazy...
Korak.
Yeah, so I kept conflating it with that. And
it had me thinking of the Indian music video superstar song, Tunak Tunak. So all of you are thinking of different...
A lot of culture in this movie.
We needed a different name for your Egyptian god. He's like, Ra, Osiris, Anubis, Karnak. It's kind of like Karnak. Matthias and Thaddeus and Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John. It doesn't really play.
It does, yeah, somehow
the pantheon.
It's different.
but you open the tomb. Shit does not go south.
Yeah, Cushing's dad is found incoherent and babbling. Laying on top of the tomb. We don't see what happens to him, I don't think, at this point.
Not until the very end of the show, yeah.
And then they're like, well, we got what we came for. Let's bomb this fucker closed.
Like, there's something evil in that tomb.
Dynamite. Sound good to you guys? I feel like I'm pretty good as a Western guy. Bomb the fuck out of this place.
And then fucking Fezman has got... He stole Britannica's set because, he's standing off to the side next to the swamp or whatever, and he's just like, which is the same swamp we'll come back to later in England.
Right.
And he's just like, you motherfuckers are going down.
You guys ever finished reading this? You ever heard of Dave Fishman?
You guys never remembered anything? I fucking kicked you guys down.
Well, that's because he had smuggled the crate into England.
Poorly.
Yeah, like labeling it as, I don't know, CDs or something, like printed material.
Jewel cases. Jewel cases.
And they're like boxes in which you keep your precious valuables because it's 1858. He's like, no, CD jewel cases, it's a Karnak thing. It's from the future. But he hires the two drunkest McIrishmen ever, which is kind of like...
I see that, even white people are stereotyping these old movies.
It's like watching, like...
British. If there's an American guy, they probably start shooting everyone, and then just, passing all over things and trying to rape everybody. Like, that's what the Americans do! No one is as classy as us British people! Irishmen.
It's that level of racism, culturally... just permeating racism that you get when you, go to the tiki room at Disney World.
Pretty much,
or watch Peter Pan.
Or sort of like a Renaissance festival.
And you got, the Indian chief, Big Chief Wampum. Ugh.
Yeah.
We just watched Peter Pan with a boy, and boy, is that shit embarrassing.
It is really hard to watch. That one makes me squirm.
I now understand why Disney made Pocahontas. They're like, sorry.
My bad. Although, I had to sit in the theater in Shakopee, where listening to them sing Kill the Savages to a theater that was at least one-third Native American from the reservation right outside of town.
Well, you gotta do that. If you're doing the story of Jesus, you have to have some guys going, you know what we should do is fucking kill this asshole.
Oh, God,
exactly like that, too. So Quentin Tarantino's Jesus Christ superstar. Wow. Get him on the phone. You can get Tarantino on the phone.
I got him.
Okay.
Okay, good.
We'll call him. Yeah, so, sure, but sweet. Drop the corpse into the swamp, because we've been drinking a good Irish.
But before they do that, they do have my favorite line of any of these movies is this little exchange that the two drunks have, because they're drinking in the pub, they gotta go deliver the crate, and they're like, we gotta go deliver this thing, and then as they walk out, both slurry and stumbly, the one guy is just like, a man's best friend is a horse, and they're gonna have it's a dog. And the guy looks real close to the horse and goes, it's a horse, I'm not that drunk.
It's amazing. I was like, that's probably the best. Yeah, it's a horse and dog, and I'm not that drunk. One might know, probably all downhill from here. Basically, how I was like, I don't know where you go in 1959 if you deliver that. I can imagine a theater full of people, and for some reason it's in England still, and they all have little tiny brands. Like, oh, stupid Irishman.
Imagine this dark is going to
get rightly, and it's saying things like that afterwards. The movie's still playing, but they're all talking and laughing over that one part. Which is why it takes, a million years before anything else
happens. They have to leave a lot of space in the screenplay.
Yeah. I'm moving quiet, yeah.
So the actual plot, we moved out in 3 years at this point. We forgot to mention that. So it's later, so I think that explains why Cushing walks better sometimes. But his dad has been in an institution and finally gets coherent enough to say, the mummy.
And then he also looks out the window and he goes, hey, you gotta call the mummy in that car, and I don't like it! And they're like, whoa! And they dump the mummy in the river.
I know, the idea that, like, all that is so coincidentally located.
Well, it's funny because it's like, yeah, we were bringing the mummy up to the house on the hill, like, right by Cushing's family and shit.
Yeah, right, they're like the only Egyptian dude for 100 miles.
Yeah, the only road that runs past both the asylum and House of Cushing.
House of Cushing was a really great follow-up to House of Buckingham.
The fall of the House of Cushing. then fucking Fesmond shows up and reads something off a scroll by the bog.
Yeah, he pulls out this, like, crisp, fresh sheet of paper.
Fiber color.
Like, unrolls it easily.
He unrolls it. He has a leather glove. He's like...
No, he just kind of whips it out. I was expecting it to crumble or something.
Well, no, I mean, it unravels... Like the way paper's like a new piece of paper is supposed to be, but there's at the very end of the letter, like he gets the right hand, but you can tell he's not very adept with his lettering. You're like, fucking fuck! You're gonna unroll it really fast.
So he does the what's up to Karnak or something, and then the mummy climbs out, which is a pretty good looking mummy. I'll give him credit for that. I like the look of this mummy.
Yeah,
he looks especially kind of covered in bog water.
Any loose bandages or anything.
And his head isn't actually bandaged, which I liked too, because you just get the kind of weird. Moldy head, but really good visible eyes, which I think helps.
Yeah, well, I thought he had at least like a death mask on or something.
Did, I don't know, maybe.
I thought he had a Call of Duty ghost mask.
Oh, well, that's
bad. Thought he was a fan of Call of Duty.
He's, yeah, really big into like Army 2. Yeah. So the mummy, what, heads to the asylum, starts breaking into.
The crawling out of the bog is a thing that actually works in this, because he's.
It looks good.
The bog is so nasty looking. And apparently just was. And I love reading stories about old movies where, like, you notice Christopher Lee's kind of stumbling along. That's not just his character. He banged his knees against the pipes that were bubbling the swamp.
Oh, that sucks.
Yeah.
Yeah, he does a pretty interesting little shambly shuffle thing for most of this,
because it can get ridiculous, but...
He keeps it, like... Yeah. He moves with purpose, but it just always seems just a hair off balance.
The first couple of times where he swings his leg really wide and, like, gets the hips in there, like, sexy zombie walk's not going to work for you, Chris. But he ends up just kind of staggering. The scene where he goes and, like, busts out the window and comes to get Dad is actually pretty harrowing.
That's pretty good.
I would like to rule out that anyone on your staff, because the window was smashed in, was like,
it's good detective work there, Lou.
From the outside.
It's just clearly.
Good job, Batman.
Broke in and killed him.
I do love that they have to have the exposition right before that. Now, it's no use yelling, y'all.
Yeah. Because
this whole room soundproofed, it can't open the door. So if you need anything, push this button over here. Right? Yeah. Next to your bed. Yeah. Okay, I'll see you later. And then it's like, mommy, pound on door. No result. Mommy between you and button, dead.
Mommy pushes the button, orders a hamburger.
I want burger.
I want to push the button. So, yeah, Papa Cushing gets choked out. And then...
He doesn't tap.
No, he's not. Cushing and his dad's old friend, I can't remember the name of, then sit around trying to figure out who might have killed his dad. And already Cushing's like, well, you did mention the mummy. And the buddy brings up the pissed off, Pete Fesmond?
Pete Fesmond.
Yep.
Which, I mean, amazing that they both nail the protagonist or the antagonist immediately.
Right.
And then do nothing with that information. They just kind of go, I bet it was the mummy. Or Fesmond. Huh, I wonder who it was. Okay. You seem to solve
at this point, we're thinking that it was some kind of a large predatory bird. God damn it, you guys.
Yeah,
we're
on it. Then we hit our flashback.
Oh, Jesus, do we ever.
With an Egyptian Christopher Lee.
Yeah, Christopher Lee
and Bronzer. On Christopher.
Bronzer and the giant Sisters of Mercy eyeliner.
Yeah.
And does not play on the Lee face. That is a face that needs no ornament.
Yeah.
So it makes him look more kind of doe-eyed than like... evil, ready to kill some motherfuckers.
Yeah, he's using kind of that doughy Imhotep look.
Yeah, like, maybe you just can't. You just can't put that makeup on without looking like a douche.
They do have the burial of the Egyptian princess or whatever it is, with some really well-placed scenery and extras to cover her nudity.
Oh, they totally Austin Powers. Yeah, that was fantastic.
Pretty clever. I thought that was great. And then my next note is just, wow, this flashback is endless. It just goes on way too far.
I like that they clearly only had one shot at getting the orchestral score right for the swords going up, and at the end they completely just botch the fuck out of the last sword coming up.
Because
it's like, sword up, and it repeats like four or five times, and the last one sword goes up, and it's like, oh, fuck!
Damn it, Carl, this is why your fourth chair drops off. It's like, shit, we fucked it up.
Can we do it again? No, we only have time to record it once.
Okay. All right. Moving on.
The only part about that entire thing that worked really was the tongue pulling out, because they had that really gnarly looking three-pointed tong thing to grab the tongue with. And like in all of these movies, they cut away from anything violent except once memorably in Dracula. But that was enough to see the thing, and like, and they cut his tongue out, and it's like,
yeah. Which is always, cutting a tongue out is always kind of gross, so.
I just wanted him to, like, to speak as the mummy, like,
just does a Brando impression for the rest of the So, let's see, back in the current time, the mummy chokes out Dad's buddy. Cushing grabs, like, a rifle, and shoots the mummy, and is like, I didn't do anything. And the mummy, runs away.
Yeah. Some really powerful squibs on him, too.
Yeah,
apparently they burned him off.
Yeah.
It actually burned the actor when they shot him, but that's a good look. You get a lot of damage coming off the back and the whole front.
Is this the part where he stabs him with a little spear, too, or is that later?
Maybe a little later.
He's a little later. But the police inspector guy shows up and is relatively understandably skeptical of the idea of a mummy did it.
Doesn't he kind of sound oddly American?
Yeah.
He looks American, too, which is a weird thing, but like, there's a look that is just wrong.
Just like, John American, FBI. Like, whoa, the FBI's been involved?
Yeah, like,
don't give me none of this jurisdiction crap.
Yes.
And I was saying, this is not hard edition.
Emperor's
hard edition.
He just shoots somebody. I love that dumb line from Blank Man. That's like my favorite line ever. When he's American, he probably shoots a couple people on his way.
Yeah,
oh, shit, on screen. He just actually came on set. He just shot.
Couldn't we have given him blanks? He would have known.
No,
he's American.
No, he can tell just the heft of the gun would be different.
They love
bullets. Just throw him into a rage. He'd start raping everybody.
Have you ever seen an American in a rage?
Cut to Yosemite Sam.
That's a cartoon, aren't they all?
We go to our next overlong flashback, where we actually see the attack on Cushing's dad by the mummy when he's...
Because Fesman's watching it.
Yep.
And it's not a great...
Egyptian Britannica.
It's not like there anything happened in that scene that we didn't know happened.
It was all implied. You could tell.
And so I don't think we needed to revisit that. Like, it's not like he came out and went, hello, my baby, hello, my honey.
No, I think it was
lurched forward.
They wanted to show us more money.
Yeah.
Because they had him in costume that day. And they're like, well, shit, let's get him in as many scenes as we can because it probably takes forever. And then... They had to pad the runtime. These movies are only like an hour and 20 minutes long, which I like. I love a short
movie. Yeah, it was nice to have it zippy. Oh, we find out that when her hair is down, and only when her hair is down, Cushing's, wife? Looks like Renanka Tep.
Princess.
Princess, we might say. Otherwise, it's a really forward-looking movie.
Yeah.
I love Moff going up to Phasma's house to basically give him shit about his religion until he flips.
Bear for hours.
That is how we're going to find out if he's guilty or not. By just like, well, probably only a bunch of dumbass motherfucker idiots believe in Karnak. Because Karnak had the smallest dick of all the Egyptian gods. And he actually had a giant pair of tits, too. Not like a sweet
and
woman
tits. Like, oh, I'm sorry, Fez, when you seem upset. I can't, what's wrong?
The best part is it's like...
You're crying like a little bitch, like a god?
The best part is like John American is like, hey, I got a whole plan worked out. So don't go Britishing it up like being all fucking wry and fucking douchey to someone. It's like, I can't really outright accuse him of being the killer, but I'm going to talk shit about everything he did until Until I make him.
If he didn't want to kill me before,
he'll want to.
Did I not mention how shitty you look in that fez?
I very seriously, Cushing, do not go up to that house, because you're going to fuck up my whole thing that I got going on. And he's just like, noted, but fuck you. And goes anyways.
We get the drunken Irish guy ends up having to talk to the inspector because he's heard he was in the woods and saw something. And it's just a great rambling, like, oh, there's a rabbit, see? And it was in a snare, and I was like, oh, the poor rabbit. And there's a guy, and he's like 10 feet, okay, 7 feet, well, 6 foot 7. Like, the inspector's just like,
they should have had a guy there doing a police sketch.
This rabbit mummy.
Is this the mummy that choked you? How many of them are there?
Now they got me thinking of that fucking thing that's been popping up all over Facebook, the dove, like, police sketch thing. It's like, is this how you see yourself, mummy? Oh. This is how this drunken Irishman describes you. Do you think maybe you're more beautiful than you let on?
I tell my mommy, say I love you.
The other laugh line for me in this movie was when Cushing's all like, alright, Isabel, you're going to go upstairs and lock the door. She's like, no, but it's too late. And he goes, Isabel, I've never ordered you to do anything before, but I am now. And she's like, very well. And I laughed my ass off.
Well, the fact that...
Because it took me 2 seconds to picture saying something like that to Greta, and then picture me waking up 3 days later in a hospital. Like, I've never ordered you to do anything, but I'm ordering you to do that. And it would just be... I'd go black. And wake up days later.
Yeah, well, that's because your order wouldn't be something like, go upstairs. It'd be something tawdry and insane.
Make me a cheeseburger and insert it gently into my anus with the ear.
I have ordered you! And you wouldn't have the Cushing smoothness either.
No.
You would go from zero to like flipping out.
I would go to like tantrum.
Yeah, it's like, would you make a cheeseburger and put it in my butt? And she's like, no.
I'm gonna turn into King Joffrey. Game of Thrones so quick.
It's immediate, like, you don't even try and smooth it from like please to screaming. It just, first attempt didn't work. Time to go to the opposite.
Because then very rarely there is that, like, kind of low-key, nobody is, you're like, I'm terribly frightened right now.
Yeah.
My God, that's Count Dracula, and he's standing right there in front of me. I'm quite frightened. You have killed my sister, and I'm quite angry at you right now.
I'm settled, and perhaps...
I'm going to have to ask you to leave. So it is just like, I never ordered you to do anything, but I'm going to do it now. Please. Please go upstairs, Isabel. Like, that's not an order.
Yeah.
He's like, go upstairs, dirtbag! But that'll be the American version.
But the mummy gets in, and you get like a double.
Like, he keeps shooting him with the shotgun because that seems to be going
like
well.
The first encounter where he shot him and it had no effect, he figures I'll get a shotgun this time.
You understand, man? Guns
blow bigger hunks off of him.
He's got a gun up,
right?
Yeah, went in down.
He also stabs him with an arrow.
Yeah,
is that a green arrow?
Could be. Why not? Let's say green arrow.
All right,
it's a weird early Marvel crossover.
No, left on green arrow.
Yeah, they have their little encounter. There's a little cat and mouse verbal banter. And then, once again, Cushing is...
Wait, a cat and a mouse with verbal banter? The part where I fell asleep?
No, that's the other Cushing. So Cushing talks to the inspector, and they plan to go get Fezman. The drunk guy gets killed by Fezman in the woods, which made me sad, because I really like the drunk guy. But I'm probably the only one. And then he kills one of the... Because they have, like, a guard outside Cushing's house or whatever. Like, they have, like, two cops running around, and the big fat cop gets stabbed, who's also in, I think, Dracula.
Yeah.
Mummy knocks out the inspector guy. So Mummy and Cushing fight. Isabel arrives. He has her pull her hair down.
Yeah, that's when you get that great, like, oh, seriously?
Yeah, because she runs in the room, the mummy looks at her.
And she says, stop! And he's like, nope.
And then, pull her hair down! So she does, and then he goes, oh, I didn't see that. Yeah. It's like, yeah.
So he's like, Isabel, I've never given you an order in my life, but I'm about you now.
Playing peekaboo.
Put your hair down. Like,
your hair's down, I can see you.
Now take your dress off.
So, Mummy kills Fezman, because Fezman wants him to kill Isabel.
Right.
And then Mummy heads off to the bog. I don't know why exactly. What is Mummy's end scheme here?
He has the fucking scroll in his hand. I think he's gonna like kill her and then bring her back and
is that it?
Complete the deal.
That's the part where I was just like, I don't know what the mummy.
Yeah, like, bro, she's alive already.
Yeah.
He's like, no, I'm going to kill her. I'm going to bring her back to life. Like, let's cut out the middleman.
Yeah, like, you
but I think if he kills her and brings her back to life, then she has to, like, obey
his... I mean, then she might, like, actually become Princess Bonokanok again.
Yeah.
That could be true. So,
yeah. I don't know, man. Mummies aren't very smart.
True.
They're not the smartest creatures.
True, true. Well, they have all of their brains were ripped out through the nose.
Yeah.
It is weird in this movie, like... They couldn't go into how really grisly the process of making a mummy was back in the day.
Pretty nasty.
So, like, if they were to describe that shit, it would get them in trouble with the censors. So he didn't have his brains ripped out through his nose or stuffed with flowers.
So Cushing gets all of his homies.
Yeah, Cushing and the Inspector like have their little posse.
Yeah, as we've learned, the solution when one gun fails is more guns.
Yeah, which is the whole end of the movie. It's just we just had to shoot him a lot.
Yeah, it's awesome because they Alex Murphy his ass.
Yeah,
they fucking do.
It's the beginning of RoboCop. It's like,
oh, I wish. Christopher Lee is RoboCop.
Ooh. And it's just like, because they do it, like, even gets shot, like, the arm fucking flies back. And it's like, oh my god, Alex Murphy.
But that's the whole thing. It's like, okay, because he's impervious to everything, and then they just shoot him a bunch, and he just kind of goes, bug time. And sinks in the bug.
I kind of dig that. That whole thing, and this is going to be a Buffy reference, because I like the, was it season 2 of Buffy when they have the judge, and he's just like, no weapon can harm me, it's like, yeah, that was back then, bro, and then just fucking rocket launcher and blow his ass to pieces, it's just like, yeah.
The other thing here that happens is, like, their big scheme is line a bunch of dudes up with guns, we'll yell, duck, and we'll shoot the shit out of
them. Ayo, River!
And then she looks down.
We're gonna ask you to have the mummy put you down.
Yeah.
And hopefully the mummy's gonna do that.
Otherwise, y'all gonna get shot.
Yeah, and then after he does that, we're gonna yell duck and start shooting in like simultaneously.
Yeah. And so hopefully you won't get shot too much in the head. And then you'll be in the bog, and the mummy will be sinking, and then Peter Cushing will take his jacket off, and you think it's to like toss to her so she can grab a sleeve, but no, he just kind of sets it down. Kind of wades in a little bit, grabs her, and pulls her up, and then just puts his jacket back on. Like, he took the time to remove his jacket because he's so fucking British. He can't hop in a bog wearing a jacket. It's just not done.
So, one would not simply hop into a bog with a jacket on.
Now, what would the neighbors think?
And then, holy crap, does this movie end abruptly. Actually, all these do is just pull her out and, like, boom, credits. And you're like, whoa.
Well, we done fucked that mummy up.
This is back before people that worked on a movie actually got credit for it, because the credits is like 8 names, and it's over 20 seconds.
If only one of them had just been like, I guess that's a wrap.
Oh.
Yeah.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
The closing pun was not invented yet.
Yeah. Or thankfully, nor the stinger of the bad guy is going to return. That doesn't happen.
Yeah, there was not a hand coming out of the bomb.
There's no indication that, like, the mummy's going to come back.
It was weird that Samuel L. Jackson came in and recruited the mummy for the Avengers.
That was unexpected.
You think you're the only monster in the world?
Actually, it probably should have been, like, Alan Quatermain coming in. Yeah. That would make more sense, but...
Somewhere Alan Moore is writing a script as we speak.
It'll be better than those three assholes who run the podcast. If they can write it, it's like, shut the fuck up, Moore.
You're just an angry little man.
I read your
bearded ass.
I read your trilogy of pedophile porn, and you can sit the fuck down. You don't get to talk about how important you are anymore.
I invented comic books.
Watchmen was 30 years ago.
I know. What have you done for me lately, Moore?
I feel bad because I have friends who are in that camp of, like, Alan Moore is the greatest thing that's ever happened to comics. And it's just like, you know who he is now? If all of comics were, like, a bar, he's that dude from The War who can only talk about The War.
He's Ed Bundy.
And they're just like...
He threw that 3 touchdowns in one game.
He's like, that guy. Hey, Watchmen! And, like, Chris Claremont, and they're like, it's just... Alan, just relax, okay?
Yeah.
We all know you're the greatest. Yeah. We're just going to go over here and not talk to you. It's fine.
Yeah, like, here, let's send him a fucking...
Sit over there with Frank Miller, and he can go, I made The Dark Knight Returns! Did you know the Muslims are going to kill everyone?
So what do we think of Tamomi?
Well, we were trying to see if there was any possibility of making, like, a scary mummy movie, and I think the answer is no.
Yeah.
It, to me, it was... real slow. When you take Christopher Lee and cover him head to foot in bandages and he can't talk, you lose a lot of the lead.
Christopher Lee?
Yeah, it could have been Kane Hodder, really.
True.
And, I don't know. I found my attention wandering a whole lot during this.
there are only a couple of things that hit. So, I mean, it's like a 4 out of 10 Beat Pheasmans for me.
Yeah, I thought this is the one that I thought had the most times where it just kind of dragged, and I found myself hitting the X on my PlayStation controller to see how much longer I had left.
Yeah.
And for a movie that's an hour and 20 minutes long, like, that's kind of unforgivable. And, you know, there's different things with, like, the era a movie is made, and they have different pacing, whatever. I'm not a guy that usually has a problem with a movie being paced more slowly, but this one with, like, those flashbacks, man, did not need that shit. So much extra footage that just didn't do anything. So, yeah, it was fine. Cool-looking mummy. Fezman is funny in retrospect.
Yeah.
And I really like, you know, Cushing is just fun to watch, and I like the drunken Irish guy. But, yeah, it's like a... This is the kind of thing that, yeah, you could have on while you're doing dishes or something, or vacuuming, uh-huh. And just kind of, like, it's there, and you'll pause to watch while, like, the mummy's on screen, and you'll ignore the rest. So it's like a 5 out of 10, A Horse is a Man's Best Friend.
And, for me, I think it's totally possible to make a scary mummy movie. I think the mummy portion of the Tales from a Dark Side movie was relatively creepy.
Pretty tight.
And I think the mummy from Monster Squad did a pretty good job of being creepy. I just feel like most mummy movies fail by putting the mummy front and center. I think it's more of a slinking around in the darkness and getting you when you least expect it is how you make
it's like
it scary.
It's a stealth zombie, sort of.
Yeah, that's kind of how you'd have to do it. It's like, bring up the dread. Like,
and
it's
with him, they... This one, they just kind of made him a juggernaut.
Yeah.
And that
he's more
that
like
works.
Golem. Than,
yeah.
Yeah. I'm just saying, in general, I think if you wanted to do something that's scary with a mummy, you establish that the mummy is, like, slinking around, killing these people, and mm-hmm. woke it up. But none of them, like, really know. Like, treat it like a Scream or, like, any of the other, like, splashes.
Yeah, you don't
like,
see it until
people
it's
people are getting killed, but nobody knows who. And
that
then in the end, it's, like, splat, it's the mummy. And it's like, oh, that works.
So, like, if... Yeah, like, if you made a movie kind of like Final Destination, where, like, those people, they all were on a field trip, and they went into that forbidden room in the museum, and they touched the mummy thing, and then all their friends are just dying, and for a while they can't even figure out why, and they realize it's all the people that went in that room, and
right.
then you actually see a mummy at some point.
Right.
That would make more sense, actually.
I mean,
wonder if that could be done well.
And I think that could be done well. I just mm-hmm. think that the classic response is, it's a mummy movie, don't show up like a mummy bunch. What a bunch of shit.
Well, because the mummy is a better henchman than he is a star.
Right.
Someone's got to correct the mummy. Fezman is the real villain.
Right.
Yeah.
You know.
So, with that being said, this is slow as shit. One thing I forgot to bring up was when Fezman's reading the scroll, he says, like, Bacana, and I kept hearing Bukkake the whole time when I was saying it. And that actually happened a bunch. There was a bunch of different parts in the movie where I was assembling a new entertainment center for our living room, and there's a part when, like, Peter, when Cushman's dad is screaming. And for some reason, my, like, 8-year-old stupid, just incredibly dumb brain, if you guys ever, all you listeners ever meet me in person, I'm incredibly stupid. He starts screaming, and all I can do is start laughing, because I'm making my own joke in my head of him, and he's going, oh, my dick! My dick! I'm just like, that mummy ripped his dick off! And I'm laughing about that, and like, God, I'm...
Like,
that's
this
so dumb. Sitting, like, putting together the IKEA thing, like, oh, my dick. So that happened a bunch in that movie, and I was going to bring it up earlier, but I forgot. I couldn't let it get
but
away.
But that's just a good indication that this movie did not have enough
yeah.
to keep you engaged
yeah.
to make up your own choice.
Funny, but then again, though, I often make up my own movie.
And a lot of times it's an improvement.
Yeah. Please leave Sleepwalker.
No, we have a tag.
Please don't.
It's on some of the episodes. It just says Adam makes the movie better. So
I would say I'm in the same camp as you guys. It's a little bit too slow. I had to insert a lot of dick-related references and Bukkake references to make myself get all the way through it.
It's kind of like when he opened the... Oh, go ahead.
Oh, so I'll just buy it really quick. 4.5 out of 10 classic twisted leg syndrome.
Twisted leg syndrome, yeah.
The first time he unrolled the scroll and like started, like looked up, my brain went, Nazafania! Like, oh, it's the scroll of life. I get it.
God damn it.
And the mummy going, here we go, here we go, mama.
He's basically just becomes Rafiki.
I monster next?
I
monster.
Or yeah, not I monster.
I
monster. Eye monster.
Eye monster.
I actually wouldn't mind seeing an eye monster, like literally a giant eye with arms and legs attacking people.
I'm sure that's how.
Kind there of is like a thing in the movie Freaked. Called?
Freaked?
Freaked is a low budget movie with Randy Quaid and Bill Preston Esquire.
He has two Jamaican
eyeballs that are mutants that are his police force, and they're just like, hey man, and like running around. I don't know. Anyway,
I never know when you're making stuff up.
No, that legitimately is a movie called Freaked. That is in it, which is terrible that it's like that. Could that very much so? I agree with you. That could be something I completely made up just now, but it's not.
Excellent.
So, I Monster, Mike Raven is a person in the movie, which, newsflash, greatest name ever.
It's a real good name.
My notes.
Wow. This movie has a 2-sentence plot summary on Wikipedia. Psychologist Charles Marlowe invents a drug which will release his patient's inhibitions, but when he tests it on himself, he becomes cruel, immoral Edward Blake, who descends into crime and eventually Utterson, Marlowe's lawyer, believes that Blake is blackmailing his friend until he discovers the truth.
You don't even need that second sentence.
I was like, wow, they didn't do a plot summary? Oh, they did.
I'm just going to go ahead and read my first two notes verbatim, just because it'll give you my overall where I was with this movie. Those chops on the butler. That mustache on the lounge doctor. All I'm doing is honing in a ridiculous
British. I love the mustaches. Like the mustache that goes straight to sideburns with the bare chin underneath.
Yeah.
Like mutton chops. That's great.
Yep, that's
great
shit. Eats his Quaker oats.
This one was the last one that I watched, and it was the worst preserved. I don't know if you, like, I watched it on Amazon. It looked like shit.
Yeah, I watched it on Amazon too. It looked really half-assed. This is the one I think when I was watching it went, does this. Just people were pretty forgiving of film stock, or is this just because it looks like shit from they probably have your crappy copy of a copy that's all.
Yeah, it is super blurry. It was like third generation VHS.
It was probably a shitty scam. They probably did a terrible job scamming.
Because no one gave a shit and they figured out whatever.
Yeah, like, whatever, $2 on Amazon? What kind of fuckheads are gonna rent this piece of shit? It's only got a two sentence description on Wikipedia. Fuck this movie.
Yeah. So I mean basically this movie's Jekyll and Hyde.
Yeah.
Would you need to pay for the rights to call it that? I can't imagine, right?
Well, they credit Robert Louis Stevenson for it, but then they changed the name.
But yeah, that's the thing. I sat the whole time going, okay, this is just going to be Jekyll and Hyde. Why don't you just call
but
it
But I think there wasn't like a Jekyll and Hyde like within the last like 8 years.
Universal had made one, I think. Couldn't get the rights, so it was Marlowe.
Damn Americans.
That could be.
Maybe Jekyll and Hyde were too American of names, even though the book was British.
Right.
Yeah. The first thing that I noticed in this, when you got the Marlowe fucking around in his laboratory, was the two-headed boy.
Yeah, the awesome conjoined twin
pig. Floating in glass. Like, oh, yes!
Yeah, nothing like a pickle park to start your movie.
Sick Neutral Milk Hotel reference movie. Like, thanks, that'll come out in 50 years.
Yeah, so you have Christopher Lee looking creepy in a creepy lab.
And you got the first Altoids can.
You're right. Yeah, he's dicking around in his lab, and then, you know, after a long day of that, heads to the Gentleman's Club, which, because of the time period, is actually a club for gentlemen to hang out in, not a snooty bar.
Yeah.
Like, so...
It's a snooty bar, not a snooty bar.
So, it's,
God damn.
I'll take a quadruple of brandy. Just like, what?
Just give me a shoe.
I'm off my tipple. Just give me a shoe full of...
I'm about to slip a pound note into this young lady's garter.
You there, boy! Fetch me a brandy.
Is that you, that brandy? Fetch me a boy.
And he's talking to a giant bottle of brandy that is golden for sale.
You're a fine girl.
So they're at the gentleman's club, and there's just like a bunch of awesomely facial haired dudes at kind of academically discussing. I can't talk today. I'm drunk on Taco Bell. They're academically discussing like the nature of evil and kind of mankind and how that works, and Marlowe, played by Christopher Lee, thinks every man is both good and evil, and perhaps the two could be separated, he says as he dick teases his current experiments back at his lab.
I like the response to that when they say, well, surely the essence of civilization is the restriction of individual appetite by the individual himself. Mm-hmm. Which is like, no, you can't just pull the bad out of a guy and have him be a good guy. He's got to have the bad in him and repress it.
Yeah, otherwise it's not actually being good. Yeah. So
I also like that all three of the doctor buddies are like, you need to stop reading Freud. That dude's a
dude, they bag on Freud.
That dude is a cock knocker. And they're like, it's like, come on, bro. Freud? Cock knock supreme. Get him out of here.
Yeah, they every time they have a discussion, either Marlowe brings up one of his crazy things and relates it to Freud, or those guys just bring up Freud to insult Marlowe with him. Like, it's pretty impressive.
Because his Marlowe's boyfriend, Freud.
Because his living is that he's a psychotherapist.
Yeah.
And he's just fucking around with chemistry on the side.
Well,
he was the world's first psychiatrist. Which one of them can prescribe drugs? Psychiatrist. Probably.
I think so
he's the first one of those.
The one that can do that, yeah.
He's making his own drugs, and
well, that's the thing.
He tries it on the cat, and the cat becomes a killer thing that he has to put down. And like, clearly, I should try this on a person.
Yeah. So yeah, Marlowe heads back to his faux science lab, and the faux science happens hardcore with like pouring beakers into things.
Well, there are Erlenmeyer flasks. Yeah, there are Bunsen burners.
But then Marlowe boots up some black tar heroin into his cat, which goes apeshit and starts to sound like Donald Duck. And then he just kind of sorrowfully beats it to death, like off camera. But then they pan down and there's like a blanket with just blood all around it. I'm like, oh, all right, that's pretty brutal cat beating.
Lee is such a good actor that he's elevating that material somewhat.
Yeah, exactly.
Where he really, you see on his face that like, well, let's see what happens if I do this on me. We'll try the cat. Oh shit. Oh man, I liked that cat. So he's like, he's overcome with emotion while he's beating the cat to death.
And that's all played on facial expression.
Yeah.
There's no
But it would have been weird if he was walking around going, I wish that I didn't have to beat my cat.
But that does happen in old movies like this. People do talk out loud describing what they're doing or their inner monologue because they just didn't know how to do the exposition otherwise.
How long till we get to the world's worst knife fight?
A little bit yet.
A lot.
A little bit. So Mrs. Thomas, or Miss Thomas, his patient, comes to see Marlowe in like the middle of the night. She's all upset. Marlowe has been using an experimental Freudian technique on her, which is just therapy. It's
right.
Listening to the patient. That's what his body.
Listening to a woman is what
woman.
Freud's
but like,
deal
that, to me, that made that whole conversation that happened at the Gentleman's Club even awesomer, because what they're making fun of him for is listening to another human being instead of just telling them what to do.
He should have just said, Miss Thomas, I've never given you an honor before.
We've been trying this experimental technique. Do you think it's helping? I don't know. Just tell me something. And he's like, what do you think that means? And she's like,
Marlowe, are you still listening to women, you stupid bastard?
So,
but she had me like, there's something that I have to tell you. And then just kind of sits there.
Yeah.
Oh, I wish I could, but I can't. And then he's like, well, then clearly you need some of my
cat heroin.
Cat crazying juice.
Yeah, so
hopefully I won't have to beat you to death with a hammer.
So Marlowe shoots up Miss Thomas with the cat heroin, and she goes all Kirsten Bell from Reefer Madness. And
yeah, like,
just wants to hump the life out of everything.
She's DTF.
Oh, yeah.
She is
fully DTF. He gives her the antidote, and then she is horribly mortified by her sluttiness.
To go back to her sluttiness, though.
Please do.
If this were a modern-day film, got right, it wouldn't be, let me open the blanket so Christopher Lee can see. If you drop the blanket, you get the buns.
Yep.
And then we get a reverse angle of the full frontal.
Yep.
It's just like, yes, clearly I know it was a simpler time and nudity was like even, you know, more hated than it is now. But you guys could learn something from the future.
Well, true.
Let's build a time machine.
I think we could all learn something from the future.
Guys?
No, we're in the future. By the way, DTF in the old Victorian era is AFR, which is available for Rumpy Pumpy. Do keep that in mind.
I will. I was way out of line on that one.
So let's see. Now we go back to the Gentleman's Club.
Of course.
And Marlowe.
Wait, did he have sex with her? Because the way that the camera,
it's implied that
there's a lot of fade to black going on.
I thought she was doming him off.
Is she like
that's
because
he goes in the other room
for that era? I feel like it's unlikely they'd be trying to indicate that.
He comes back. She's got the blanket. Blanket comes off, and then fade, and then he's like kind of rumpled, and so is she. Going, I can't believe I did that.
Yeah, like, And that could be that he just was like, I might as well get me some as long as she's in this state, and then I'll dose her up with the antidote. It could be. He could have been a little regular.
It was just, it was a little strange, because the way like he presses her down onto the bed, and then he like smiles, like, oh, she's totally doming this dude off. But then again, that's my future.
Oh, I thought he pressed her down into the bed because he was like, oh, okay.
And then you got the bang.
I also have AFR.
So we'll just all assume that one way or another, you know, Lee got his dick.
There was some sort of insertion.
So we're back in the...
Not to put too fine a point on it.
Hi-oh.
Hi.
Marlo kind of teases all his buddies about the idea that he has this drug that'll separate good and evil, and he tells them he's tested it, like, on a cat.
Well, yeah, he said, like, he gave it to mice, and some of them...
I think he said he gave it to some of his patients, but he
couldn't... Insane, and some of them crazy.
They could repeat experiments.
Yeah, well, the one guy comes in who's all... Burr, 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 and then she shoots him up, and... He's like, oh, mommy.
Yeah.
That guy has the best line in the whole movie. It's a hard job for a hard man.
So many movies have that line in it, but this one is the best.
Yeah, well, the best line in this movie.
Right.
Yeah.
But that's not saying much for the movie. It's just such a weird... Calling yourself a hard man, it's such an odd thing to say. Like, I know back then it didn't mean what it means now, but it was like, my wife was like, I'm really tough. I'm a hard man. You would just laugh.
I would probably run, actually.
Yeah, it's like, it's getting rapey in here.
It's like, I'm a hard man. Like, no, that's not...
No, it's I had that weird pause when he said
I'm hard man. I'm a hard man.
I'm a hard man. Yes. I'm Chris Hardwick.
Bill Hartman.
I'm Bill Hartman. Yeah.
The jerk businessman takes the cat heroin, becomes a total pussy. Then back at the club, Marlo laments... not knowing if the drug has the same effect with multiple exposures. And so he decides to try it and shoot himself up. So he shoots himself up with the cat heroin. And then, like, some fife music comes in as he kind of minces about his lab, looking at himself in the mirror and grinning. Like,
oh, boy.
I was like, okay, so did he get super childlike like the businessman? Or, because, like, theoretically, you know, we learn as the movie goes on that he becomes malicious and evil. But the first time, he just seems to have this weird childlike wonder, and is kind of looking at his...
But his grin is kind of off-putting.
Yeah, there's a hint of malice there at the end, because then he picks up the mouse and has a scalpel.
Yeah.
And then goes, I should probably take the antidote. And does that instead.
What if it was, the drug makes Christopher Lee play with fire and glass.
Yeah.
Because it's basically, he got the cat MDMA instead, so he just like... Dude, this flask is awesome. This fire is so, like, hot. Did you ever think about, like, how fire can, like, it keeps us warm and it cooks our food, but it can kind of destroy us. But it doesn't want to.
Yeah, man.
It doesn't want to. It's only if we're not careful. We have to take care of it. The fire just wants to be taken care of. I have done MDMA before. And I recommend it to everyone.
So
Dunn has done MMA before. Recommend that. As heartily.
So, Marlo theorizes that the drug eliminates either the id or the superego while he talks to his mentor, some old guy.
Yeah, we have to go through the entire explanation of what all of these things are.
In case the audience doesn't know. So, Marlo goes back, shoots up at the cat heroin again, and just grabs a scalpel for an out of town.
Yeah.
So, here's where we get to Adam's worst knife fight.
So, he starts to get, like... His bags under his eyes, his teeth get a little worse, he gets like a boil on his face, and he talks cockney.
It's like crystal mouth.
Yeah.
Yeah, it is. It's kind of like that.
Cat heroin, not even once.
He struts around town, steals a walking stick, rents a room in a flop house, and then he picks a fight with a thug. Because he just kind of keeps running into people on the street because he can. And then, like, of course, there's the cockney alleyway guy who, like, ain't having none of it.
He was menacing the girl.
Is that what it was?
And so he almost steps into, like, the gallant gentleman's role.
But it's more than he's...
Yeah, he just wants to fuck somebody up. Yeah.
So,
and fails.
Adam loved the knife fight, I take it?
It's just... There's a lot of, like, swiping and then, like... Ugh.
Like, yeah.
I honestly found it to be striking in how silent it was. Because all you hear is their feet scuffling around. There's no intense music for the fight. And it's also, I thought, relatively accurate to what I would picture a knife fight between two untrained fighters to be. Because no one wants to get cut, so you're like, man, I'm just going to take a quick swipe at the guy.
But I would assume that the dude with the flat razor, since he's a street urchin, should probably be handy with the steel, if you know what I mean, to earn your keep.
But would he... But the thing is, if you're that guy, you're going to be more likely to be threatening a woman where you don't actually have to fight her. you can just hold the knife out and she'll freak out and you can take her money or get laid or whatever, and then off you go. You're not going to pick on another dude who's also armed and willing to fight you as much as you want to fight them.
And at the size of Christopher.
Yeah, it's probably done more on intimidation. So it made sense to me that, oh shit, this guy's actually fighting back. Well, I can't back down because all my other street urchin buddies are right here.
But Christ, is that a long scene with no payoff?
It's really long and weird, yeah.
And so, by the end of it, like, he ends up grabbing the kid, putting the scalpel up to his throat, and then, like, pushing the kid away. And the kid's like, what? I'm not bleeding. Thanks, mister. And like runs off. And
which is bizarre. So, like,
sorry for wasting your time.
And this, I guess, is supposed to maybe be early enough on in his transformation cycles where he has a little bit of himself to kind of go like, oh, this is getting out of hand. I better run back and take Yamato.
Yeah, he knows, like, he knows better than to kill the kid at this point.
Still, yeah. So now we're back at the Gentleman's Club. Cushing and Lisp Guy are discussing a crime where Blake, which is his hide to his Jekyll, has trampled some girl in the street, and there's a super long story about, like, he runs into a little girl, walks on her, the crowd stops him, they tell him he has to pay the family £100 because he fucked up their kid.
Right.
And he goes into some door in an alley, and they realize that the check he brought is signed by Marlo, so Blake, the monstery guy, is paying for debts with Marlo's money, which leads them to think that Blake is blackmailing Marlo for some reason. With no motive. They never actually seem to describe it. They just say blackmail.
Dude, it's Cushing. He doesn't have to have a motive.
That's true. Yeah.
Let's also keep in mind that the differences between Blake and Marlo are really, really subtle.
Oh, absolutely.
So it's almost like if he looks exactly like Marlo, but he's lower class and he's talking with, like, a working class
accent.
And he's
willing to beat people up.
So, you know, a gentleman would never be like that. It must be... There's nobody ever makes the connection that Blake and Marlo might be the same dude.
Yeah.
Like, so, at the end, there's a whole thing, like, with the handwriting matches.
Yeah.
They're like, huh, well,
the
why
face
would,
matches, too.
Yeah. Why would this fellow be blackmailing him when have identical handwriting and live in the same house?
So Marlo has a will now leaving everything to Blake if he should go missing for more than 3 months.
Mm-hmm.
I think he's figured out he's getting too deep into his experiment or whatever. He only does it, like, 9 times, though. Because, like, he keeps a journal, and they show it, and it's, like, experiment number 9. And, like, that's, I think, the final.
Well, then he gets to where he has the unwitting transformation.
Yeah, at the very end.
Where he starts to...
Yeah. So, Cushing and company assume Blake is blackmailing Marlo. Cushing waits to meet Blake. But before he can see his face, Blake, like, smacks him with his cane and goes in the door or something like that, or gets away.
Yeah.
So, like, that kind of prevents the whole identifying him or whatever. Cushing goes to Marlo, tells him to get rid of Blake because he's bad for him, they argue. Then Blake goes all violent because he goes to that bar to pick up some slutty chick, buys her a drink, and then she denies him.
And yeah, because her boyfriend shows up, and he's like, well, excuse me, me and the lady are together. Together. And she's like, I would never have sex with a man with his dick as big as yours.
And then, like, shrill laughter.
Yeah, the entire bar laughs at him.
Yeah, so Blake heads up to his flop house.
Piper Laurie's in the back going, they're all gonna laugh!
So Blake goes to his flop house, watches from a window until a slutty chick leaves. And then he heads down to pursue her. And when she first notices him following her, she's like, oh, it's you. And then just, like, the fact that he's sitting there grinning creepily and following her down a dark street at, like, 3 a.m. doesn't seem to bother her for the first 10 minutes.
And then she's finally like, oh, all right, let's fuck. Kind of. Like, a little bit scared, but she's like, well, come on, take it then. And she starts pulling up her dress. He's like, no, I was going to do the other thing. And he whacks her on the head.
So,
with the game.
Yeah, he chases around endlessly. That's another thing that was way too long. Like, they go through, like, a hydroelectric plant or something for some reason. Anyway, he finds her, beats the shit out of her, breaks his walking stick, and the cane is left at the scene, which is how Cushing recognizes the murder weapon when they draw a sketch of it in the paper. Confronts Marlo. Marlo tells him he sent Blake away or he left the country or some shit so they won't see him anymore. The butler doesn't corroborate Marlo's story. Cushing investigates and notes the similarities in handwriting, which has really nothing to do with anything.
And Cushing playing detective is part of all three of these movies.
Yeah.
Pretty much.
Let's see. So then Marlo is kind of done being Blake and he's at a park trying to have a normal day. But notices, like, his hand is getting all twitchy and weird, and he's kind of getting angry for no reason, and he's blaking out without the cat heroin. Returns home, he's all freaked out.
There's some good physical business with that.
It's got that
transformation thing.
Am I not in control of this aspect of my body? It's trying to make me do stuff. He goes to his old friend, who's in the house with too many pictures, transforms into from Blake to Marlowe in front of that dude, and his buddy just dies from watching him do
that. Yeah, it's so shocking, it gives him a heart attack.
And he just dies. So the transformations are coming hot and heavy at this point. Blake trashes the lab, he realizes only Cushing suspects the truth, goes to kill Cushing, but they fight, he falls down some stairs and dies. And then he goes back looking like Marlowe in death.
Yeah.
And credits. Again, just slam right on top.
Well, there's the beautiful little scene with the guy who's not Peter Cushing. The epic mustache dude.
Yep.
Who corners Blake in the room and has the great little speech. Like, if you try to leave, I'll be forced to prevent you. And that little bottle that you seem to care about so deeply might get broken. It's like just a really nice underlying menace.
Yeah, that British thing.
It's not like, put the fucking bottle down! It's like, if you try to leave, I will have to prevent you. That is a guy who could probably just strangle you.
Yeah, he feels like that dude is pretty confident in his ability to whoop some ass.
It's not like when he's Blake and he's any stronger. He's just
evil person. He's just more feral. Yeah.
I like when... So the way that Blake / Marlowe dies is he gets his back lit on fire.
Yep.
Fatal in most cases when you're wearing a heavy
overcoat.
Especially
with a cape, yeah.
He does a great fall down the stairs, though. Yep. Comes up against a mirror. You switch to the mirror's point of view for a second, which was have him smushed up against the mirror,
mm-hmm.
which is a shot that's kind of out of place in this, but it's something that seemed revolutionary to me, that they would pull something like that. And then lands at the bottom and
it's like, 'twas beauty killed the beast, and there he is.
Yeah. And yeah, he gradually fades back into looking like a relatively peaceful Marlowe, and then credits.
Relatively peaceful Marlowe.
Peaceful Marlowe.
All right, so how do we feel about this business?
I actually really like this one. I think this is my favorite of the three we watched. I dig the Jekyll and Hyde story. Watching Lee kind of act off of himself, I guess, especially like early on when it, like with the cat scene, and then just kind of his weird, because the physical transformation of Blake is pretty subtle. It's just kind of like always having your teeth bared a bit, and then there's, you know, eventually it gets kind of like the sunken eyes and
5 o'clock shadow and
yeah. But overall, it's not like there's monster makeup really. He's just kind of him looking a little weird and kind of manic, and that's just cool to me. I thought it was just because it leaned more on Christopher Lee to make that transformation.
I think he's subtle. Good, but if we had seen more of Blake, that might have. He doesn't get a whole lot of business with Blake. There's hardly any screen time.
No, not really.
So I would have liked to see him be able to just power it a bit.
Just go eat shit for a while.
Yeah.
Remy also likes Blake. Mm-hmm. So yeah, for me, this one I like quite a bit. Still kind of a little slow. But I'd go with like the 7 out of 10 cat arms.
I was bored. And what I thought when I pictured Christopher Lee as Jekyll and Hyde, especially having just seen Dracula, was that it was going to be super badass, and that he was going to be great in that role, but they barely let him do anything.
Mm-hmm.
He's hardly ever Blake, and aside from the couple of little shots and little bits of dialogue that really popped, the rest of it, I was continually pausing it and going, oh, 37 more minutes, huh? Wonder what we're going to do with that. Maybe they can have another knife fight for another 20 minutes. So, like, this was probably my least favorite of the week, and so I would give it like a 3.75 Cockney prostitutes out of 10.
Wow.
Cocknitudes. Cooler AFR.
I also did not like this one very much. I thought this was probably my least favorite of the three as well. The mustache and the chops just could not save this movie. They didn't have enough mustache and chops for me.
They just didn't have the chops.
They just didn't have the chops to save this flick. I was pretty much continuously bored, and I was also like, fuck, there's still like an hour left of this movie. So I'm probably fall somewhere in the 4 out of 10 cat beatings out of 10. That's how my spirit felt after watching that movie.
I feel like I've been beaten with a cat or by a cat?
Well, I was beaten with the cat that was beaten by Christopher Lee.
That's a heady combination.
Boy, that was a heady remark. So we're going to take a quick break and we'll be back with the horror of Dracula. Oh, by the way, I, Monster, you're Monstro.
Oh, there we go.
Yo, Monstro!
Get your ass over here, man! I ain't seen you with Dave!
Which is the alternate take from Pinocchio.
What up?
God damn it. Alright, we'll be right back.
So our final Christopher Lee movie of Christopher Lee week, in Christopher Lee month of Christopher Lee year, is The Horror of Dracula, or El Horror de Dracula.
Dracula.
Which is good for Dunn, because you were talking about some Aqua Teen Hunger Force.
Dracula.
Like, I'm pretty sure that anything that could happen has happened in Aqua Teen Hunger Force, yeah. So you can just keep referencing that. I've decided my approach to that series is to let other people describe the funny scenes to me. Because otherwise you just sit there like, I'm not stoned and this is not funny.
Well, it's like Napoleon Dynamite is better when someone just tells you a funny line, because that movie is shit.
See, for me though, Aqua Teen though is like, it's all the banter and the way that that all those characters interact with each other. That their story is, who cares
they
what happened.
Have them,
yeah, it's like, I mean, at this point it's just kind of like, the characters are there, something happens, and they kind of talk and make fun of it. And yeah. And I laugh at that because I like the interactions between people. It's probably like where I get most of my humor in my life from, is watching people talk to each other. So that's why I like Aqua Teen. Me and Josh, in our early days of our friendship, had just a back and forth of why that wasn't funny,
right.
Why, yes, it was funny. And it was great because it's an argument where neither of us are wrong, but we were adamant that the other was, in fact, incorrect.
Yeah, well, it's like arguing about what girl is hot or what movie is scary.
Right.
And it's like, yeah, none of these things. You can't argue somebody into laughing or out of a boner.
Yeah, pretty much.
You can argue someone into a boner if their fetish is being argued with.
That's sure.
But if their fetish is their own flaccid penis, they're just going to be frustrated all the time.
Yeah, that's a bummer.
So The Horror of Dracula, by the way, this was the first one I watched, and the first note is, this score is going nuts with horns and strings! Because the beginning credit is always like, The Horror of Dracula.
This is a super helpfully named coffin.
Yeah, this is a Dracula. Should have said, like, Bob Dracula.
I know. I felt like it was just, like, his office. Like, Dracula works here. Like, there's people in and out boxes on the coffin.
Mr. Dracula's my father.
In and out boxes means a different thing.
Yes. Well, it's Cockney rhyming slang.
So someone drips some red paint on Dracula's tomb.
Yeah, they do.
Because the blood in this is really vividly bright-ass red.
It's reminiscent of, like, when they did the really garish blood in Dawn of the Dead. Because they wanted, like, it can be cartoon, we just want it to really stand out. And they definitely went that same route, you know, 3 decades ahead of time, this one.
So Christopher Lee, we're in 1958, he's 36, so he's, like, roughly my age. He looks like he's 50.
Yeah.
I mean, at that time, I guess, he had made, like, 20 movies and had also been in a war.
Yeah, probably.
So he had seen some shit. He's, like, Christopher Lee got some city miles on him.
Yep. So we open on Harker's Journal, which is cool, because, like, the, you know, the book Dracula is all, what do they call it, epistolic?
Epistolary.
So it's done, everything you're reading is, like, them journaling about it after the fact. Which is an interesting...
Or writing letters.
Yeah, yeah. A weird way to kind of tell a story. And it breaks down a little bit towards the end of Dracula, because they end up going, well, now that we're all together in the same room, I'm just going to keep writing everything that happens. And it's like, well, because I guess otherwise the book would just have to stop.
I think Bob, the stenographer, just continues.
Kinda, yeah. So it's like, okay, that's kind of cool. There's a nod to that.
That immediately made me go, hey boy. Because I can't stand the book Dracula.
Really?
I've tried to read it 3 or 4 times, and it's just... fuck's sake. Yeah. It's so very boring, and everything is happening in between pages. You know, and so seeing that, I was like, okay, well, we know how this shit goes.
Yeah.
Which it then began to pull the rug out in interesting ways.
Yeah. No, I actually really liked Dracula. I thought of, like, that early classic horror, like Frankenstein is the boring one to me.
Oh, it's boring too.
Dracula both worked for me. Anyway, so Dracula's castle is fucking hideous and stupid. That bothered me immediately in this movie and just never went away. It's also very clearly not really there. Most of it is just like a painting.
Yeah, it's a giant map painting.
Yeah, there's like the gatehouse of it is clearly like on the soundstage.
The whole left side of the screen is not real.
Yeah.
And then including the additional babbling brook that they decided to attach to that bridge. It's like, look at all that water. It's like there's a jet of water, like, Like, those are water jets are like the size of a basketball.
Yeah, it's like if you have like a hot tub bathtub with the jets, and you turn them on before the water's covering the jets, and so there's like, it's like, oh, mom's gonna be mad when she gets home and sees how you use your bathtub.
Ruin everything.
So yeah, that's the era. So, like, you get that.
Harker gets, like, meets Dracula, and he's like, hey, we're bros, I'm here to fucking dust your books, or whatever.
Yeah. And he's like, yes, quote unquote. There are many volumes that need to be dusted off.
Yeah.
And he winks at him.
There's like 10 inches of shelf that needs to be polished.
Can you fit all of the 10 inches of the shelf? Oh, I can fit it. I'm just like, is he weird anyway?
Which one are you talking to?
But they're doing the, like, that very quiet British thing.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, yes, you know, I'm here to polish your books. Like, ah, yes, I trust that we will polish them well. I'm sorry that I have to go out now, and I will be back later.
Mm-hmm. Is this your little wife?
Fiance. She's very beautiful, if you're too kind.
Yeah.
I would stick my dick in her. I would do.
Well, when Harker goes in, he, like, walks into the main dining room, and there's just, like, the note that's, like, have dinner, I'll be back.
Yeah.
And he, like, lifts up the little finger, and there's just what looks like three huge raw livers.
Yeah.
Just laying there, he's like, and puts the top back on, and it's like, yeah, I guess I would too there, bro.
Yeah, next time you come over to my house, I'm just gonna leave a note.
Like,
sorry, I had to go just have one of these hamburgers that's not
like,
good.
But no, just have this raw beef. Like, you know what to do with ground beef, right?
Yeah.
Just, I guess, put it back in the fridge for you.
And then him and Dracula go up to the room, and he's like, oh, great, blah, 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 and then he locks him in. And he goes, he's like, panic, and he goes, derpy smile.
Well, okay, Dracula.
Dracula locked me into his bedroom.
But before we even get to that, Cheeky comes running out in the dining room and is like, you need to take me away from here, it's awful. Is that the chick that was the Isabella and the Mummy?
Because
I watched these back to back, and I was like, I can't tell if it's just that I'm assuming it's that.
There's
and
a very definite style of face for British women in the 50s, apparently.
Yeah, but since like the teams on these movies were similar, and they share a lot of actors, I was like, I probably could just be.
How about that power chick mullet on
her,
though?
Yeah,
she was glorious.
So we get in that scene where she comes and asks him for help, and he's like, "What do you mean? I have no idea what's going on." You're waiting for the like tedious setup where Harker gradually realizes that things are fucked, and when he gets into his room and writes in his diary, like, he has accepted me and he trusts me, now I can end his reign of terror. In my notes, I was like, 4 exclamation points! Fuck yeah, he already knows!
Which,
that
how?
He knew that, like, before the movie starts, he's tracking Dracula down. Which is kind of awesome.
Like because when I was watching this, I was confused. I'm like, does this scene take place near the end of the movie? But it's done Tarantino style, where we're watching that earlier?
Harker and Van Helsing are kind of like the Towers of Power. They're Macho Man and Hulk Hogan.
Of course, right.
Coming together to wrestle away the tag titles from the Iron Sheik and Nikolai Volkov.
Oh, okay. Gotcha.
But in this instance, both of those guys are Dracula.
Dracula is Volkov.
Yeah, and this is WrestleMania 2. This isn't like, we're already at WrestleMania 2. This is not the months leading up to it.
Right.
So that's all the stuff that's happening.
Okay, so we're already at ring entrance.
Yeah,
okay.
Exactly.
Gotcha.
It's like Inspector Javert already knows that it's Valjean. Yeah, fuck you, guys.
He's
talking for the audience.
He's trying to take some Les Mis bullshit.
That's what that is. Okay.
Every time you go pro wrestling, I'm going to go musical.
The best part is that I knew, and like,
I didn't know.
It's like when Brad and Janet come to the castle, they don't know shit about Frankfurter.
Okay,
but Dr. Scott knows already that Frankfurter
is
the guy.
Well done.
Okay. Dr. Scott!
Rocky! Bullwinkle! But that's a beautiful way to mess with the source and make it play better.
Yeah, I think
that you can't get away with in movies now because you have to adapt everything super literal.
Yeah.
Where they're like, hey, what if Harker is already on a mission when he gets there? Then we just skip a whole bunch of that shit, and it's awesome.
Did you... Maybe this is just me, but I felt like Dracula throughout these opening scenes is always moving a little too quickly.
Mm-hmm.
Like, Harker's just like, okay, we're gonna go up to... I'll show you your room. And Dracula just has... He's walking at, like, 1.25 pace to Harker's 1, and she just kind of sweeps into rooms and just moves a little unnaturally, which I don't know if that's just me being crazy or if that's a character choice, but I kind of dug it. And also, when Dracula walks Harker into his room, you can see his breath.
You can see Harker's too.
For just like that first little bit, and I was like, weird. Like, is that supposed to be?
I think that set was just cold as fuck.
I know, but yeah. I was like, okay, is this supposed to be like Dracula's inhuman? He wouldn't care about these creature comforts, or nah, that set's just cold as fuck. We can see the breath. Don't worry about it. It's fucking Transylvania.
There's like a fire in the fire station. I'm like, man, that set is cold as fuck, man.
Right?
Like frost, bro.
Yeah.
Thank God we're inside this castle. Shivering. Thank you for bringing me on board.
Yeah, so the Dracula locks Harker in his room, and like you said, Harker kind of goes, checks up, and he's like, I'm out of you. And I was like, dude, it's like 8 p.m. Like, what if he has to piss?
Yeah.
Like, that's fucking weird.
That's what the fireplace is for.
No, just before I saw that he just carried his fucking diary with him everywhere that he went, it was just like, I'm going to kill Dracula. I'm going to fuck his shit up. I was like, well, easily found letter is probably not the best thing to write in Dracula's castle, bro. then he like took the diary and I'm like, alright, well, I guess that's better. But still, yeah. Like, dear guys, I'm fucking gonna kill you. Love, Harker.
Well, also, this... maybe they just didn't show this part, but like Harker shows up to stay at Dracula's castle and brings his bag, which he then opens, pulls out a photo, a journal, and like a pen. No clothing, no like luggage. He shows up with a fucking backpack and is just like, settling in to dust your books, sir. Forever. I hope you don't mind the funk. Because I don't plan on changing.
It's like, oh, you bring in the noise, I'm bringing the funk.
So Harker goes exploring later, and same chickie runs up to try to get rescued again, but then it's a ruse, and she bites Harker.
That was another joy moment for me. Like, oh, sweet, she's not damsel in distress. She's going straight for the
throne. She's already, like, in Dracula's
thrall.
Yeah.
When he walks into the room to meet her, he's walking like Bill Gates shaking South Korean president's hand style. Like the...
That is a style with which I am unfamiliar.
Well, you guys not seen the whole Bill Gates kind of insulted all of South Korea because he shook hands with the president with his hand in his pocket. Oh. His hand in his pocket and he shook her hand. And that's like a big faux pas in Korea.
Huh.
Well, that's how he's walking. He goes like, you know, the best pockets are like up to your mantis.
Too useless.
Yeah. Yeah. He's like, yes, I will walk like this in the castle.
And
it's
the
most comfortable.
You have to have a hand in your waistcoat.
So yeah, on your watch. Like that. Since nobody... fucking those current events.
So do they just hate Alanis Morissette in South Korea for different reasons than we hate her here? So she had one hand in her pocket and the other one was hailing a taxi cab. Jesus.
Anyway.
Isn't that ironic?
She also gives...
Look, you want to know that these are great jokes.
Oh, isn't it ironic with all these jokes?
Yeah, I was already there. You owe me a doofy laugh because you just had that joke.
Good.
So we get first Christopher Lee and Baker.
But enough, Dracula breaks up the fight.
But wait, behind the door.
Wait, behind
what's behind the door?
The lady behind
the mummy.
Because he walks through the door and then shuts.
Oh, you're right. Yep.
Da da da. Classic. Freak out. She's back there.
So yeah, she bites on the Harker neck, and then Dracula's like, "That's mine." And
all necks are my necks.
Oh, yeah. All the necks belong to me.
And he gives her the classic gangster strong arm, throws her ass to the ground, and Harker's like, oh, dude, chill. And he's like, I'll throw your ass to the ground, too.
And then he passes out because he's English.
Yeah, because I'll Dracula all over your face. And it's just like, that doesn't...
I will Dracula down a flight of stairs. Stop it. Christopher Lee looks badass in that makeup, though.
He does look pretty good. He makes a good Dracula.
You don't have to do much to his teeth to make him vampire teeth, but everybody's got just a like a subtle sharpening of the canines when they're vampires.
Yeah, they don't go overly...
He's got some killer contacts, which apparently he couldn't even see through.
Yeah, early movie contacts were so fucked, like fake usually. And even like in the original Nosferatu, like when Deuter's Dracula, he literally cannot see. So there's scenes just like run downstairs and grab someone who kept falling down the stairs. It's like the one where he didn't fall is the take you see in the movie always, because it was just like, he doesn't know what he's doing.
That's crazy. He couldn't see. He like ran and jumped across that table.
Yeah, like there's all kinds of nutty shit like that. So like, okay, he's going to be right there. Do your best. Just lunge. And your job is to make sure he tackles you and doesn't just face plant on the floor.
They said a couple of takes he ran past the girl.
Yeah.
So they had to just run it again. Like, no, she's over here.
Yep.
He's like, these really suck. These contacts.
Really suck. Quote Dracula.
So again, Harker wakes up the next day in his one outfit.
With the door locked again.
With the door locked and his neck all puncturified.
Yep.
So he sits down, whips out the diary, and he's like, dear diary, I'm a shitty protagonist. I fucked it up right out of the gate.
I did not make it through night one of my subterfuge.
I got bit by the mullet lady, and then Dracula strong-armed my ass out of the ground. I'm going to write the rest of this letter, hoping that if I hide it inside of the Virgin Mary statue area, that someone will find it, and blah, 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 blah.
So
that's what happens to Hark. Oh, Hark then...
He grabs his bag of steaks.
Right, and he brings the thunder and takes out
the... Yeah.
Which...
He chooses poorly.
Yeah. He chooses very poorly. That was the same thing. I was like, you found a coffin. Dracula's in one, like, mullet girl's another one. Well, I better start with mullet girl.
I think he, like, the thought process there could have been, it's not too late to free her soul, because she's just a thrall at the moment.
Yeah.
So they talk about that later, like, I'll set your sister at peace, and then we'll see the Dracula. Right. So I think he was like, I'll get one, then I'll get the other. But he was off on his almanac, because he's like, he wakes up, he's like, what is it, noon? I got some shit to do. I got some shows to watch. I got to catch up on the House of Cards on Netflix.
Yeah, his DVR was nearly full.
He's like, he's like, oh shit, 5 minutes till sunset. Yeah, I better get my ass down there.
My DVR, Dark Dynasty's on tonight, and I know I'm not missing that.
And did you guys notice where he places the steak, like, right above her stomach?
Yeah, as I'm watching this movie with Kona, I go, that's not where her heart is. She goes,
well, here we go. And just like...
Which gives like directly pool. Under the sternum.
Yeah, like, yeah. Right, yeah, and like, and it gives you a nice pool of blood once it drunk like drives in. It's just like all this blood wells up, which looks pretty cool.
But as we all know,
for the era, pretty graphic.
Vampires must be stabbed in the diaphragm to death.
Yeah. That's their weak point in sci-fi.
I love that they like cut away and then back, and she's just an old lady.
Yeah.
I like that. Was pretty cool.
That was pretty cool.
Then she, you know, she shrieks and she dies, and she's an old lady. Which I wrote, bro, she's old. Parker's horrified that she'd be old.
Yes.
Can't believe I was going to tap that.
And then...
Should have tapped that before I stabbed
and
that.
And no longer has... Should have stabbed it a different way.
Hey.
You're correct. So, instant night happens.
Yeah.
Like...
Night fucking falls. Gravity is heavier.
Literally, someone ran a curtain by the light and was like, it's nighttime!
It's like when you put a parakeet to sleep and just throw like a blanket over it. It's like, oh, it must be night.
And that's what happens. And then my only note is, after the instant night happens, is, you done fucked up, son.
Pretty much.
Just like.
Pretty much.
Yeah, you know, so he just basically just gets dealt with.
And he gets told by Dracula.
Off screen.
Yeah.
I can dig that, though. I can dig the just... Because you can make Dracula look as terrifying as you want if he doesn't have to move or do stuff when he's in his full, like, animal mode. So you can just give that, like, really imposing thing for a second and then fade to black. And then fade back in on the jukebox in the Transylvanian pub, which is playing, like, a little music box polka.
Yeah.
Which I thought was great, because it's a giant... like fucking jukebox in their 1850s pub.
So, is Klausenberg a place?
Sure. Why not?
They moved them a lot closer to... And they didn't set it in London either. Like, everybody else lives like 300 yards from Castle Dracula.
Pretty much.
Yeah.
Which makes more sense, again, that Harker would know already.
Yeah.
Like, somebody's been killing motherfuckers all up and down.
Yeah.
Now, I asked Josh this because he... has a video game that has like inns and things in it.
Sure.
The innkeeper says by law of him being an innkeeper, and since he ordered a meal, he's got to fucking serve this guy.
Right.
I did not know that they're like ironclad, like you cannot break these rules as an innkeeper. Even if you hate the customer, he's like, I ordered a meal and a brandy before we fucking had words.
Yeah.
Right.
You're going to make this. I get to eat it,
yeah.
And then you can send me
I'll eat my meal in uncomfortable silence, sir.
So I turn to you because you're my authority, since you are the creator of a video game that has an inn in it. And I want to know what the rules of the inn
are. In the game, it's only a bar.
Yeah, it's just a typical...
And if it's not a bar and grill, then you don't have to serve them. But an inn, basically, by law, is a bar and grill.
Okay.
So you have to bar them and you have to grill them if they ask for it.
Yeah, under the Chili's/Applebee's Accord of 1854.
Yeah. Is that where Chili's and Applebee's?
Yeah, it was Bob Chili's and Fred Applebee's. Yeah.
I'm learning so much. I love this.
And Theodore Gary Ignatius Fridays.
Oh,
The
I I love how long it took you to get there. Oh, you're like, what stupid ass joke is he making? And I couldn't have said like Bob Denny's and Fred Perkins. No. Or Anthony Perkins. Theodore, Gary, Ignatius Fridays. I like that. So the innkeeper doesn't want to give up any info to Gramoff.
Right.
But his daughter starts talking out of turn.
Right.
And it's not, it's
and
still
you can tell
not
she
like.
She can get five across the eyes and get back in the kitchen.
But it's still not a like, you, Tarkin, get the fuck out.
Yeah.
It's go make him his meal. You promised him a meal. And I like that the menu back then was just, is there something I can eat? And it's either a yay or nay. So he could have brought out, you know, like, bull testicles or
but,
something.
Yeah,
like,
but I mean, I think that honestly might be more accurate because
sure.
that time it's like, okay, what do you make? Well, they made a huge pot of beef stew. If you show up and you want a meal, you get beef stew or you go hungry. And I guess I'm having beef stew.
Like, but I'm a gluten-free vegan with a peanut allergy. Well, you suck the fuck out.
Fucking got born in the wrong century, son. But as Dracula, or no, Helsing learns some shit from Serving Girl and then heads off to Castle Dracula. And just as he's arriving, a carriage with a coffin on it leaves, which is like Dracula, like, I'm going to go find that chickie from the photo, I'm assuming, right?
Yeah.
Which I really like that a little bit. You're like, oh man, like we know he's arriving too late to catch Dracula there, which is kind of cool. Like it's they don't play that up too in your face, so I kind of like that moment. So Van Helsing finds the now vampire hooker in a basement coffin.
Right.
Drac is all left, and Mullet Girl's dead. Let's see, what else? Oh, then we get to Van Helsing talking... What's Lucy's brother's name? I just kept writing...
Arthur.
Brother, Arthur. So Van Helsing telling Arthur that his wife and Harker are dead. They decide they want to go tell Lucy that because Lucy is all sick and shit in bed and they don't like Van Helsing right off the bat.
Yeah, because he's giving them... He's being really cagey and vague
yeah.
about how they died, as well he might.
Sure.
And that is a... This is another example of just brilliantly streamlining the story because there are too many characters in the novel to make it work as a book, or as a movie. So you do away with Harker early on so you don't have him running around with Mina and Lucy and Arthur.
Yep.
And that and put making Mina and Lucy part of the same family. Mm-hmm. So it, the reason why I like this so much is what they did with that story.
Because he's been feeding on her by the time Van Helsing even gets there. She's already...
And there's another little swerve there, which is great, where she's just in bed and she's been sick for a while, we don't know how long, and as they leave, she's like, and there's a little puffiness in this region here, maybe a hole or two. right about the jugular. We noticed it, but we thought she said she had been bitten by a bug.
It's also weird that for some reason Van Helsing is listening to his own vampire advice on a tape recorder that doesn't exist yet.
Maybe he's Memento.
Right?
He doesn't remember.
Like, why are you listening to yourself, instruct yourself on how to kill... Thank you, exposition guy.
And like, the butler comes in and he's like, who are you? I heard people talking in here. How could that possibly be?
Right? Well, because it shouldn't be. There's no photograph. Like, what's he doing? Like, I don't know. Is that the part... I can't remember if it's that or it's a little later. I don't know.
Well, first, Drac comes back for Lucy, and she is way more intrigued than frightened while he is walking up to the bed.
Absolutely.
She is AFR.
What's the... No, the...
I'm going to keep hammering on that.
I like it.
No, I like that. That's fine. The part I'm wondering about is there's a scene in here. I don't remember exactly when it happens, if it's when Van Helsing's listening to his own advice or if it's a conversation he has later. But they go, I've heard vampires can turn into, like, wolves or bats.
That's the brother.
Like, stop talking nonsense.
And I was like, that's great. You just justified not needing the budget for those special effects. Like, that's a handy bit of, like, in-narrative justification for budgetary limitations. I, like, thought that was kind of cool. Bummed me out I wouldn't see, like, Christopher Lee turn into a bat.
Right.
But at this era, watching Christopher Lee turn into a bat would probably be pretty shit.
While all of this business was going on, and fucking Van Helsing is like, hey... Here's what's up. I'm going to give you the second opinion because I'm a real doctor and that dude's just an idiot.
Right.
And so throw up some garlic, all it bends, and if you take that shit down, this bitch is dead.
Yeah. And lock the windows and garlic everywhere.
Like, legitimately, you need to listen to me very seriously. This woman will die.
And he even says, and she will probably complain.
Yeah, like, even if she's like, don't, like, get him out of here, just don't listen to her. You don't listen to me. I mean, The battle station will fire when ready.
Yeah.
You know, because he said that many times before Star Wars. And so they listen to him kind of, and then it's like, oh, I can't breathe because of these flowers. And
Boner Jam the Maid.
Yeah.
Does classic Boner Jam.
Claudia Boner Jam. Of the Southampton Boner Jam.
She's like, oh, I'll get all of them and I'll take the window open. It's just like, oh, cool. Just completely ignore.
Yep.
And then she dies and the family's like, we see what you've done. And she's dead now because of your way of
quackery.
He's like, actually,
right.
Y'all. My shit was supposed to be up all night. You guys did the exact opposite thing of what I said, and she's dead, which is what I said would happen if you didn't listen. You kept the dumb maid. She's like, but she said it was her. I was like, I don't care. I'm Cushing. I'm G'd up to the max. Look at this coat. Look at this hat. I'm killing vampires all day. You're just sitting here being a maid. You're worthless. And I was like, that's a really mean bit of dialogue, but it's all right, because Cushing is fucking G'd up. Yeah.
This was a great... Another great example of that really subtle British thing where, like, so his best friend and fiance of his sister is dead. His sister is now dead. He's like, well, regardless of what happened, you've brought nothing to sadness since you came here, and I'm afraid we'll have to ask you to leave.
Yeah.
And his nine's like, get out! My shit is dead!
Like, rather than screaming like in a movie would, it is a quiet intensity to the way that...
I'm afraid you're going to have to go.
Everything. Yeah.
Yeah, well, it's that the Eddie Izzard thing, like, I better go. Yes, I think you better have it. It's like a very subsumed subdued. By the way, Arthur is Alfred the Butler from Batman, and that is great.
I didn't notice that.
Because apparently he had a young face at one point. Like, yeah. Christopher Lee knew.
No, that's not.
But Arthur is definitely...
That's cool.
So, far cry.
Lucy's niece... sees Lucy shortly after her death.
That was neat.
Because Lucy don't want to stay dead. And Vamp Lucy is pretty creepy looking. She's kind of freaky with those teeth in.
Right. Like, let me give you a kiss.
Yeah, that's messed up. That alone would be scary. If she wasn't a vampire and said that, I'd be freaked.
But I like that first you get the girl saying, like, last night I dreamed that Lucy came and we went for a walk. And you're like, okay, that's slightly fucked up. But then she goes out again and sees Lucy and has that whole super creepy...
Yep. We get the really cool cross-scalding.
Yeah, because Van Helsing's like, yo, I just didn't listen to you. I didn't go anywhere. I stayed here because I knew what the fuck was up.
Yeah.
And I just needed to open your eyes because you're dumb as shit.
Yeah, so now you've got to be stopping, doubting my shit.
Yeah, now that you know that I'm fucking the man, I'm legit. Potentially too legit. There you go.
God damn it.
They just listened to me. And he's like, I'm going to kill what's left of your sister so her soul can, like, go up to heaven and stuff.
They're like, do we have to do that? Yeah.
Pretty much. Yes, yeah, we do. A fucking vampire. So Van Helsing and Arthur resolve to kill Dracula.
Oh, but by the way, when he's killing Lucy, that is actually a pretty harrowing shot because he's, like, both of them are kind of horrified by what they have to do.
Yeah.
There is a shot of a stake going in. And then the blood spurting out.
Yep.
So that gets... Like I said in my notes, there's something to be said for getting the Shakespearean-level actors and throwing them into this because the reaction is just so much better.
Yeah. They do much more with the quiet moments than your average horror movie actor.
I gotta say, I didn't expect Dracula to have a, like, tiny, shiny white coffin.
Yeah, that's a little weird.
It looks like a kid-sized coffin.
Mm-hmm. It's like, really, it does not look like Christopher Lee would fit in that.
Yeah.
It's a little odd. Mina gets bit.
Well, I love the, like, they go and talk to her, and she's like, yeah, I'm just not feeling so hot. And, like, let's see, you look pale. You have a giant thing, like an entire rabbit over your neck.
And you're acting a little wonky.
What could it be?
They go to the silly coffin guy. Like, Bob's wacky coffin storage. He's like, oh, you want me to go down them stairs before you and I'm in front of it? And you're like, oh my god. You had eight lines and you chewed the fuck out of those lines. Like, you were going to make sure people remembered you were in this movie. And they go to the bargain basement coffin storage and Dracula's coffin is missing. So Van Helsing and Arthur... decided to keep watch on Mina's room from outside the house, right? Outside the room, or something like that, to try to, like, make sure they can see if Dracula approaches. Dracula fools them and gets in.
Yeah, because it turns out the Dracula was coming from inside the house.
Right. And then there's the like, scream, and then it's an owl.
Yeah.
And I was like, whoa, is this like the original, like, cat scare from Alien? Like,
that made me think of The Labyrinth. Owl flies out.
Oh, it was like an owl with a reverb effect on its wah-wah pedal.
It wasn't dropped.
It didn't sound clean, though. Like, that's like, the thing. Was like, I didn't respect because it didn't sound clean. Owl rock. Rocked by HSHD.
Owl Judas plugging in, going electric. I liked Dracula's final thing with Mina where he just kind of stares at her until she gets into bed and was like, have some neck.
Yep.
He's, and they didn't bother with any goofy hypnosis effects or anything.
It just sort of implied that he could compel you.
Just kind of like, I'm kind of afraid. You're kind of hot. I'm kind of afraid. You're kind of hot. Take me.
Yeah.
And that was fine. Well, that was good stuff.
So they do. They start doing the blood transfusions.
Best line. You'll need some fluids. Coffee, tea, or best wine.
I know. I laughed at that. Perfect. Too. I was like, yeah, all right. But when they do the blood transfusion, Cushing actually does a really good job of the way he's performing everything. He's obscuring any need to try to show a needle going in or out of anyone.
Yeah.
Because it's like he puts the I guess you'd call it downstage hand, you know, the one side closer to the camera, on the wound so that his hand is obscuring, and then he fills up the bandage, puts the thing on it, and then folds his arm up so you never see, and everything's happening just right behind his hand. And then he goes to the other side, and just, he's never really standing in the way, but he's always doing something that prevents you from having to watch the specifics of what he's doing.
I thought that was interesting in him
avoiding having to figure out if you're going to stab your actor with a needle. Not that they probably would have cared back then.
Well, like in this and in I, Monster, they never show a needle going into an arm, which seems like that was just a bridge too far or something.
I feel like there's one.
You get really close, but you always cut it.
I could be wrong.
It's super right. close. It's that psycho effect, though.
Yeah.
Where you're like, oh, right. Clearly that dude got stabbed in the arm.
So they are downstairs chilling out while Arthur sips his wine or whatever, right? And then you hear the scream from upstairs, and you get fucking action Cushing.
Yes.
That's the one, like, American moment where he hops a banister needlessly to bolt up into Mina's room. Is that the part where the slap happens? The best slap in the history of cinema?
During
that conversation right before they go
flipping their shit, and he's like, fucking chill!
And then you get the perfect slap sound effect that's clearly added in later because he's like holding both her shoulders, and I swear his hand just moves straight up and right back to her shoulder. There's no like cross motion. Like, I don't think it ever crosses the plane of his body, hers, or her face.
Well, think about
it.
It's just like, he's like the mantis shrimp. Like, he moves his hands fast that he can boil and the air around him.
Yeah.
And it's just like the concussive force.
It's more the shockwave than the slap than the actual slap.
Cushing is the mantis shrimp modeled itself after Cushing. It's science.
I love the fact that we all know what a mantis shrimp is.
How we all live on the internet.
Like, how would you not?
That's fucking weird.
As soon as someone sent me what the mantis shrimp was, I became so enamored with how badass a killing machine it was. It's like, because when we were working on that movie that no one knows about.
Green Lantern.
Green Arrow.
They were talking about the mantis shrimp. The people at the studio were talking about the mantis shrimp because it has 18 cones of vision. You know, humans only have red, green, and blue. Mm-hmm. And it's like, holy shit, imagine what it would take to make, like, a movie in 3D with that. And it would be 18D for them. Mm-hmm. It's like, your infrared channel is...
That's a lot of Ds.
Yeah, that's a lot of Ds.
18 of them Ds. Did you say we're throwing some Ds on it?
Do you say that when you're working on 3D movies? All right, let's throw some D's.
No more D's in that scene. More D's.
No, we say shit like...
That scene craves the D.
A lot of times when you're working on a movie, you have to take all the grain, the film grain out of it, mm-hmm. because it fucks up what you're doing, and you have to put it back on there later. And when we were working on Transformers 3, fucking Tyrese constantly says, bring the rain. So we were oftentimes when someone forgot to put the grain back in their shot, and I'd be like reviewing them to send them on to someone higher up the chain, and be like, gotta bring the grain! Bring the grain!
Excellent.
Why do you have to put the grain back in? Is it people find the natural design in there?
Well, it's super smooth and things look... It's a weird thing. It's like the artifacts that we're used to that determine why things look good to us. Right. It's the degradation.
So the imperfections actually sell the reality back.
Right.
Yeah.
And also, it's especially helpful with the CG elements, because CG elements are super smooth and not grainy by nature, because you're just creating them in a vacuum... Cleaner.
So it gives them a more...
That's where all CG is made. Is
and a vacuum cleaner?
Mm. It's a Dyson, though. It's nice.
Oh, that's good. A Dyson, I mean, come on. Kirby?
It's an Oric. We're bringing a bowling ball and shit with it. It's like, wow, it's a great vacuum. So, yeah, you have to put grain back into your shots. So That is something.
Do you do shots of grain alcohol while you're putting grain back in your shots?
This time I didn't drink very much during the movie. I got to have scotch a few days on while I was at the studio. It's a rough day today. Probably should have some scotch.
So I was like, all right. It's all madmen up in here. Can I smoke? No.
This is California.
You can have avocado, though.
Yeah.
So the maid reveals that, she told me that I shouldn't go into the cellar.
Yeah, I don't want to disobey again, because last time I disobeyed people, should I go in the cellar?
No, so it's a good thing they were like, hey, could you run to the cellar and grab some shit? If they had been keeping that shit on the main floor, Dracula would have
just owned they just had another bottle of wine on the mantle. They just far and gone.
But this is another one of those compressions that works in the movie.
Yeah, it just gets everything to go.
You don't have, like, Carfax Abbey, where Dracula's staying, and his castle is, like, 45 minutes away by horse or something.
Yeah.
So you miss a lot of that having to travel around and do shit.
Yeah, definitely.
So they go looking for Drac in his castle, because they find the empty coffin, they throw the cross in,
which is pretty smart.
Yeah. And then Drac shows up in the doorway in a very cool and dramatic way.
Oh, you're right, yep.
And they get past him, and they know he's going to the castle.
Mm-hmm.
So, Drac runs into the castle. And Dracula chooses poorly.
Yeah, he does.
Because they say, he could get into the catacombs and hide from us until we're dead.
Right.
And he chooses instead to attack them.
Well, he chooses instead to waste tons of time burying Nina alive.
Yeah.
While it's clearly daylight. He's just like, well, I've got another 6 hours before it's noon, so I guess I'll bury this chick in my front yard.
Dark enough.
Yeah, I guess. I'm in a shadow here.
He's got a tarp above him.
Yeah,
if it's
dark enough. So,
parakeet. It's
the parakeet levels. Yeah. Parakeet logic. Dracula spends a ton of time burying Nina alive until basically right when they arrive is when he takes off running into the castle. It's like, man, you had a good hours of head start. Because you dug a deep ass hole there.
He could have been rigging up traps.
He could have been just in a dark room waiting for it to be nighttime. Where he has the advantage. Advantage? Dracula. they could chase.
Imagine them playing tennis now. Advantage, Dracula. And he's like, goes to the server, and it's like, oh god, it's daylight. Rams off, and it's just like,
you see the little bat thing.
Pete Sampras beats Dracula. That's how much tennis I know. Pete Sampras, like, 20 years ago.
Let's bust out that Andre Agassi reference.
That was the only other one. Oh, John McEnroe. There it is.
Oh, you're right. Yes. McEnroe versus Dracula. I'd watch it.
40-40, Advantage, Dracula. Boom! It's all Wile E. Coyote. He burns up only once he realizes that
just turns into a cinder once he remembers to look at the sun.
He serves and just aces it right back at him. I'm like, yes!
So, Van Helsing and Dracula fight for a bit in a room, and then he pulls a curtain down and the
Dracula... Oh, first he does... First he does the candlestick crucifix.
Oh, yeah.
Plot... anything can be a cross if you hold it up crosswise. Alright, what
happened?
Just examine how mad. Ooh, basically, fucking Cushing and Dracula fighting in a room. He just does not give a shit about what he's talking about. Cushing and fucking vampire fucking dancing around and shit. When he fucking, I don't know, rips the curtain or whatever. I don't know why. Just broke me down.
Continue.
Cushing with the two candlesticks. Cushing in the dining room with the candlestick.
There you go.
He makes a little cross.
That is something I'm glad other movies have explained away. The idea that you can just do the two things together, the finger cross or whatever, because everything in the world has something crisscrossing on it. So theoretically, a vampire.
Rest in peace, Mac Daddy.
Right, but I mean, theoretically, a vampire could not go anywhere.
If
any two things that crossed each other, like tree branches, would be crosses in that case, and that would fuck up a Dracula. But
as George Michael observed, you gotta have faith. A faith. A faith.
gotta
keep going.
If I could move your body, just like somebody like me.
You gotta imagine Cushing.
Just
Well, I guess it would be nice if I could touch a mummy.
He's got the stick. He's like you're doing the ass.
Yeah, like, I know not everybody's got a body right here.
Great job cushioning down the mess.
Yeah, the man is a renaissance.
So I've got to think twice before I get my hard way. And I know all the games you play because I've played them too. I better go.
So I guess you leave. Basically, it's like fucking cross-forced.
Cross to the ground, yep.
And then he forces them back into where the light is cast on the ground.
Yep. Except giant curtains first.
Right. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Right
the way. Down the curtains or whatever. Yeah.
Right.
But then, yeah, uses the
he cross. He fails to say, it's curtains for you, Dracula. And then leaps and rips the curtains off. And guess what? It's daylight, dumbass.
Yeah.
Which thousand-year-old vampires, as we've noticed in most of our movies, don't know when the fuck sunrise is.
Well, clearly Dracula's feeling pretty badass about the whole sun thing with the whole spending daylight hours burying Mina in the front yard. So he's getting a little cocky. Maybe it's just got to be, like, sunlight magnified by the power of glass something.
The first one... where his arm burns away is pretty cool.
Yes.
Yeah, that was
the
great.
Second part, when it's him...
the Dracula puppet?
He falls back, and it looks like a fucking Muppet.
It does.
And it's just like... I'm waiting for him to be like, oh, it is great! Just like something ridiculous. Oh, you should share all your cookies with every of your friends. Like, that was an odd turn for this movie. But that puppet was fucking trash.
The puppet was really bad. Oh, and it's referred to as the iconic turning to ash scene on like the Wikipedia. I'm like,
The best part is that he actually turns into ash from evil dead.
Yeah, pretty much. So yeah, Dracula kind of melts away, and then you have like the
Mina's okay now
art shot of like the dust blowing away from the ring that remains on the floor.
Which, of course, in my head, I close my eyes only for a moment, and the moment's gone. For all you hipsters, dust in the wind.
Oh, gotcha.
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Dust in the wind.
Gotcha. Okay.
No, I knew I shouldn't have started at the verse.
Yeah,
like,
I don't know.
The hipster fuck has never heard of Kansas.
Now I was just like, I hope he goes all the way with this.
Yeah. Okay.
Same old song. Adam, I'm going to need you on the violin. That's for everybody. Earth and sky.
Just start making the violin. I was like, I don't even know how a violin sounds.
I don't know.
Bah, bah, bah. That's a French horn. I don't know what instruments are.
Boom, 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 boom.
God damn it. Trippity, not the same. So Dracula's defeated.
Credits.
Again, just credits just come slamming up.
Well, they have a little, like, Mina's okay. She gets, like, yeah, you have the cross that's on her hand, which is now, like, drawn in charcoal instead of being a star.
Oh, yep.
Vanishes. Yep. And then credits.
What I was hoping for the end of this movie, since, like, Arthur realized he was a total toolbox to Van Helsing, that we'd have, like, a Chuck Norris style ending, like, Mina's hand, like, fades away, and, like, Dracula's blown in the wind, and Arthur looks at Cushing and goes... Cushing goes, hand in pocket.
Yeah,
or
thumbs up.
Hits him a thumbs up right back, and then we freeze frame, and then credits.
Yeah.
And that's how they do it.
Don't you forget about me. We just need Cushing with the hand in the air. We realized that day that we are all
the cross still.
We realized that day that we're all a vampire. A vampire hunter.
A toolbox.
And
a, right, Arthur.
And a dumbass maid. So this was the first one that I watched. The second two were exactly what I was expecting and fearing with this, where they're paced for a different era, and they kind of drag, kind of whack in nature. This, I thought, was super cool. It seemed like to have that modern zip to it. I liked the way that they streamlined the story, and I really liked Lee as the vampire. Cause he only talks in the beginning, and then the rest of it is just kind of lurking, looking creepy.
Being masked.
And he's fantastic at it. So I really enjoyed the shit out of this. I would give it a solid 7.5 garlic flowers.
I enjoyed this too. I'm a bigger fan of Dracula the book, and honestly, the one they made with... I hate to say Keanu Reeves, but that's the only actor's name.
Oh, yeah, I love Bram Stoker's Dracula. That was a cool
movie. That one, I thought, was a little truer to the book, and a little does a lot more of the extemporaneous stuff that you kind of like they did away with.
Yeah.
But actually, because that version's a little closer to the book, I really liked it.
Is it Commissioner Gordon Dracula?
Yes, you're right. Gary Oldman's Dracula in that one. And he, of course, just kills him in anything. That had, is that the one with Tom Waits as Redfield?
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
Monster.
So I really loved that one. because I think it's that little bit closer to the book. This is still really enjoyable. I honestly didn't realize this was going to be basically a straight-up telling of the story Dracula. Because there's a ton of Christopher Lee Dracula movies that hammered it.
Yeah.
This is the first one, so it makes sense that they started with the kind of the origin story. I'd be curious now to watch a couple of the other ones.
Yeah, me too.
And see sort of where they go with that. And
like, apparently the 1930s Dracula was still playing in theaters because this was pre having it any other way.
Sure, yeah, I'm sure it's just
that. So they called it Horror of Dracula so it wouldn't be confused with.
Right. So it's, you know, like, I feel like if you get to, you know, Blood of Dracula or Tomb of Dracula, whatever they did to all the other ones, if it's just, hey, it's just another story where Dracula's killing some people and someone's got to figure it out, like, is it just kind of the next episodic Dracula tale? I'm assuming Dracula dies in all of them, which is weird.
Yeah, but then there's always, like, if there is a hair-lipped guy with Down syndrome who trips and spills blood on the ashes of Dracula on a full moon when it's Wednesday.
Well, that was Castlevania 2.
Then, yeah, then he can come back from the dead. There's always this, like, set of conditions that must be met.
Yeah, yeah. Like body parts.
Yep.
That was Castlevania 2.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I was always confused as to why you needed, like, you killed him in the first one, but you had to collect all of his body parts.
You reincorporate him so you can fight him again? I'm like, like, disincorporated.
It's like, really, there's only one thing a Belmont can do, so if that's Dracula's gone, then you're out of work.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's just like, well, Simon, you done fucked the pooch.
The rest of the family has shit to do now.
We are vampire hunters. You've killed the last vampire. We are unemployed forever.
Vampire. Dracula. Vampire. So how did this hit you for numbers?
Yeah, I really enjoyed it. I think I like other versions of Dracula better, or at least one. But it's an enjoyable movie on its own. So it's like a 7 out of 10 maid slaps.
Maid's laps or a maid's laps?
I'll let you interpret it.
Slapping some maid laps.
Mm. Hey, maybe a lot of slap laps.
This was my favorite of three, for sure.
Worst euphemism ever.
What was that noise that you made there? This was my favorite of three as well. We're all back together and we can't hold together for shit. We're doing great.
Yeah, I wonder now if we're going to get a barrage of people like, man, you guys really got to much more information on the old episodes when Adam was out of the state.
Yeah, well, I had to, like, fucking, all right, good guys, we got to go.
We got to roll. Much more informative and concise.
I like this one the best of the three. Not like that's very hard for it to be the best of the three for me. Just because the other two were so boring. I would say I have no real attachment to the Dracula story or vampires in general, so I've never read the book, never had really any inclination to read the book. So for me, this was just fun. Mm-hmm. I'd say it's probably 7 out of 10 tiny white coffins.
Oh, nice.
Mm-hmm.
Cool. Yeah, I feel like I still think of the three we watched this week, I Monster is probably my favorite.
Interesting.
Yeah.
I wonder if it had been less blurry and, like, shit-hacular transfer, if I would have liked it better. I want the movie that I imagined in my head, where Christopher Lee is just striding large across London, chewing scenery.
Yeah. And I bet there's another movie that's like that.
Yeah.
Out of his...
And that movie is Star Wars Episode II, Attack of the Clones.
Exactly.
I just really did not like I Monster because of how often they're in the Gentleman's Club. It's like anytime they're like, well, Gentleman's Club.
Yeah.
Well, we wrote ourselves into a corner. No, we didn't. Just write what comes
next. Do some more exposition in the Gentleman's Club.
No, Gentleman's Club. It's
Yeah, I don't know. That one worked for me. All right, let's take a break, and we'll come back with next week's assignments.
Yeah, we will. All right, next week we realized that we had never done the Scream movies, and I think we've talked about them a little bit on the show a couple of times. So we're going to get in on those, going to hit all four Screams, 1 through 4.
Even the third one.
I didn't think that was as bad as... But I do...
The third was the one that had, like, Jay and
Silent Bob. It had Jay and Silent Bob in it, and Carrie Fisher randomly.
Pretty half-assed.
It was, like, Kevin Williams and Wes Craven just hanging out with Kevin Smith. Like, we should just share out the movie.
Yeah, let's just do this.
It'll be fine.
Yeah.
And then we're going to watch Scary Movie 1 through 5.
No.
Okay, we'll watch Scary Movie 1 through 5 and the Haunted House one that just came out.
Why don't we just watch Scary Movie 2? No way! It's got that part with David Cross and Chris Elliott making fun of each other for being disabled, and it's great.
I love that scene.
Yeah. That justifies that movie existing.
Scary Movie 1 was so good.
It was, but Scary Movie 2 is also good. It's not like it's 3 through 7.
Are there really 7 of them?
I don't know.
The 5th one just came out.
I was very nervous that I may have been right.
That you just manifested
it. It's so funny for saying 7. It's like 3 through 7. I'm like, yeah. Mm-hmm. I guess you count like Epic Movie and like Dick Balls
Didn't the Wayans brothers make another horror movie parody that was not called as?
They just made one, the Haunted House.
Is that the one?
They split into two factions now. The Wayans have. House Wayans is divided.
The house is divided upon itself. Cannot stand. We hope
the house that's divided on itself produces movies we cannot stand.
The Starks and the Lannisters now.
Yeah.
Damn it.
They're like the Starks and Obadiah Stane. We'll be back next week.
That's nerds.
Well, Scream 1-4. Join us if you like. Rate us on iTunes. And if you like us, tell 2 other people that you like us. Yep. Please.
Bye.
Bye.